I declare the meeting open at 5:30 p.m. I welcome councillors, management, members of the public in attendance to the City of Melbourne. We respectfully acknowledge that we are meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation. This place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world and a significant meeting place. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place and a location for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public the meeting is being recorded and will be made available on the City of Melbourne website before close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of the meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. Should there be any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting and documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of the Council business team after the meeting. Could I ask that all mobile phones be turned off for the duration of the meeting? The agenda comprises 8 reports from management and 1 item of general business, and received an apology from Councillor Wood. I advise members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than 6 members voting in favour, the decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. If any councillor has either a direct or indirect interest, as defined in the Local Government Act 1989, in relation to a matter to be considered by committee, please disclose the type and the nature of the interest prior to consideration of the item. Could I call on a councillor to move a resolution adopting the minutes of Open Meeting 39 held on the 8th of July 2014? Deputy Lord Mayor, Councillor Foster seconded. I'll put that motion. All those in favour? That is carried unanimously. Thank you. Are there any matters arising from the minutes of the previous meeting? As at 3 p.m. today, the following submissions were received in accordance with the Council's Conduct of Meetings Local Law 2010. In relation to Agenda Item 6.1, Melbourne Planning Scheme Amendment C247 for 433 to 455 Collins Street, Melbourne, requests to speak from Adrian Pozzo from CBUS, Nick Corrales from Woods Bagot, Omar Taravaka, Shop Architects, Sarah Horsfield from Urbis, and Tim Shannon, Professor of Architecture at Melbourne University. In relation to Agenda Item 6.3, Melbourne for All People, an item of correspondence from Dr. Lucy Firth. In relation to Agenda Item 6.4, Pathways Homelessness Strategy 2014-70, a request to speak from Major Brendan Nottle from the Salvation Army. In relation to Agenda Item 6.5, Community Infrastructure Development Framework, a request to speak from Anthony Vanderkratz. In relation to Agenda Item 6.6, Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal, Community Engagement, Key Component Outcomes, request to speak from Anthony Vanderkratz, Greg Smith, Mary Lou Howie, Mary McDonald, Ryan Murray, Ivana Giselli, Jenny Pike, Joe Storakic, Barry Carter and Jan Cochran-Harry, and items of correspondence from Greg Smith, Mary Lou Howie, Manuel Jimenez Navarro, Tony Bierakos, Ivana Giselli, Miriam Fain, Jenny Pike, George Malonis, Jan Cochran-Harry, and Marshall Waters. Is anybody here who would like to speak to an agenda item that whose name I have not read out? Thanks, Con. We'll add you to QVM. In accordance with the Council resolution of the 26th of March 2013, a 15-minute period is provided at the beginning and the end of the meeting for questions from members of the public. Questions should not be greater than 90 seconds in duration. Are there any questions from the public? Yes, thank you. Could you come to the lectern and state your name, please?
The Honourable Lord Mayor, Councillors, Tony Penner, Southbank Residents Group. Last weekend, Southbank Residents Group attended and was a part of the Southbank Farmers Market. During that time, I got to chat with a number of the locals, and the number one topic that came up was, once again, open space in Southbank. I refer my questions to the Lord Mayor in this meeting last Tuesday regarding the Boyd development, in particular the commencement date of the development of the remaining section of the block to allow for the planned and much-needed community open space. I mentioned this development was supposed to have been completed at the end of 2013. While I acknowledge the Lord Mayor advised he didn't have all the information at hand for his response at that time, the Lord Mayor advised he believed that the date of the end of 2013 was for the completion of the Boyd Library. May I refer you to the council brochure on the Boyd redevelopment, and I quote, August 2010 to March...
this is a time for questions, not submissions.
I'm getting to it.
Yes, but it's Lord a time Mayor. For questions, not submissions.
Okay. I'm aware of no less than 2 previous planned commencement dates which have come and gone during that time of which the developer was supposed to have developed that site, before the end of 2013. I asked the Lord Mayor if Council has any firm assurances other than the unreliable word of the developer whether this new proposed commencement date, as advised by the Lord Mayor last week of February 2015, is locked in or just another date that's going to come and go.
I'll give you the same answer I gave you last week. My understanding is they'll commence in February. Thank you. Are there any further questions? In that case, could I call on Councillor Ong to assume the role of Chair in relation to the planning portfolio?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. There are two reports from management for consideration under planning portfolio tonight. First item is agenda item 6.1, the Melbourne Planning Scheme Amendment C247, bracket ID 2014-3, which relates to 433 to 455 Collins Street, Melbourne. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? Not. I will now call on those who have requested an opportunity to speak. Firstly, I'll call on Adrian Pozzo, who have requested. You have 3 minutes, Adrian. Beep will sound after two.
Thank you, Councillor Long. Thank you, Lord Mayor. Can I thank you and the committee for providing us with the opportunity to speak tonight. I would just firstly like to give you some background on CBUS property. We've developed and we own investments to the value of over $5 billion. Can I reel off just a couple of developments in Melbourne that we have completed? 8 Exhibition Street, 171 Collins Street, 700 Bourke Street, 720 Bourke Street, 181 William Street, 313 Spencer Street, and 35 Spring Street. In Sydney, we've built close to $1 billion. We built the first 6-star high-rise tower called One Bligh Street. We're also developing the Money Box at 5 Martin Place. All these developments are developments where we have won awards for architecture, buildability and sustainability. Developments where we've collaborated and partnered with stakeholders and authorities to achieve positive outcomes since 2002 when we started 8 Exhibition Street. If I turn to 447 Collins Street, the team at CBUS Property is passionate and we're a proud bunch of people. We are immensely proud of the contribution and quality of developments we have undertaken that we believe to date has helped define Melbourne. We are passionate about our developments. We are also dreamers, attempting in many instances to undertake the unthinkable and the improbable. However, importantly, we always believe we can do what others believe is the impossible. We believe, and we hope you will also believe, that 447 Collins Street represents the next chapter and evolution of development in the CBD, a unique island site in the heart of the CBD. And I'm going to say it, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity with an end value in excess of $1 billion. All we ask is that we work together within an agreed time frame, say a period of 4 weeks, to progress this opportunity. We believe the journey to work with the various stakeholders and authorities is an ongoing one, and we would welcome the support for this journey to continue. Can I close? I'll repeat again, we have successfully worked with all the relevant stakeholders and authorities over the past 12 years in this fine city. We do deliver what we promised. There are no shortcuts at CBUS Property. We're here for the long haul. We believe we are a safe pair of hands, and we would appreciate the opportunity to share our vision. The impossible does not exist in the CBUS Property psyche. Collaboration and partnering does. And on 447, it will provide a truly significant and magnificent contribution to both Melbourne and Australia. Thank you.
Questions for the speaker? Councillor Mayne.
Yeah, thanks very much, Adrian. The situation with Market Street being Crown land, so not being in Council's control in terms of potentially delivering a 3,000-plus square metre new piece of public open space. Have you had any initial discussions with DEPI, the relevant department for dealing with Crown land?
Not as yet, Councillor Mayne.
Thank you,
as
Adrian.
We go through the presentation.
Yes, Lord Mayor.
Adrian, you mentioned the possibility of a period of pause, maybe for 4 weeks, where we look at a range of the issues which you have on the table, and very commendably, but for which we don't have any confirmation or surety. Would you be amenable to a delay of 4 weeks in this decision while we work together and let the department know we were working together on things like the exact amount of open space, the future of Market Street, the built form, if you like, because what you're asking us to do here is consider a planning scheme amendment without actually knowing specifics beyond the building envelope of the proposal.
Lord Mayor, all we're asking is for that 4 weeks to be able to sit down with the relevant parties to go through that whole process.
So you wouldn't be adverse to a deferral tonight in order to reach considered agreement between us on what might be a firm proposal?
Not at all, Lord Mayor.
Thank you.
We take that on board.
Thank you.
Thank you, Adrian. Let me take a seat. I next like to call on Nick Corrales to address the committee. You have 3 minutes, Nick.
Thank you, Councillor Ong. Can we please turn to the presentation? My driving is on.
Nick, you may as well tell us where you're from and stuff.
Okay, hello. My name is Nick Corrales from Woods Bagot Architects, also working with my colleague Shop Architects. As local architects...
Do you want to wait until you... Because your time will start otherwise, and our technology shouldn't be doing
right.
This to you.
Okay. Thank you. Hello, my name is Nick Corrales from Woods Bagot Architects, working with Shop Architects on this particular project. As local architects, planners and urbanists, we try and identify sites that have enormous catalytic potential for our city. The site that Cbus have acquired is a full city island block of approximately 6,000 square metres. Here is a real potential for us to continue to enhance the quality and livability of our city. It is a unique island site within the Hoddle grid at about a midpoint within the city structure. Historically, it is very significant. This was the original turning basin where the ships came in and created the original Western Market. In 1870, there was a two-storey building in Collins Street that was converted in 1960 in a 22-storey building with the National Mutual Plaza in front of it. It is now 55 years on later from that journey, and there is a possibility of creating even a more unique story. We believe that there is a potential for a wider district improvement plan to incorporate many of the attributes and many of the existing competition ideas that are in the city to make this truly worthwhile, to potentially re-establish the northern facing plaza to a northeastern quadrant. If we look at the components of that district improvement plan, we have the relocation of the super tram stop directly in front of our site. The potential has been discussed about the softening of Market Street in terms of traffic to enhance the scale of the public open space. The Immigration Museum with its memorial is a true cultural and civic asset. The Flinders Street Station competition, whilst it is still a competition, proposes an incredible concept for the city to overlay a welcome plaza, a civic court and a major terminus. The northern, the enhancement of the northern Yarra Park with its five key sculptures there is also a possibility really to turn this project as part of the necklace of a cultural loop of exercises. When we analyse what is a civic square, a public open space, we've looked at the State Library, the City Square, commensurate scale public open spaces that we've become dear and loved. Here in 447 Collins Street, we have currently approximately 2,000 square metres with the ability to transform that to well beyond 3,000 square metres and create a new public open space. I'll hand over to Omar.
Sorry, I have a question for you.
Nick, before you hand over, councillors may have a question. Lord Mayor.
Do you accept that the Market Street extension is a critical part of the final concept that you're offering us?
We accept that that is an important component of the scale of that space. Whether it's greened or road, it still has benefits.
Better green, though, don't you think?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Next call on Omar Thorobaka to address the committee. Nick, one more question for you, Councillor Watts.
Thank you. You describe yourself as an urbanist, and that's a new term for me, but I can see where it's coming from. I'd like to... You've spoken about the size of this potential space and the vision that you have, but you haven't spoken at all about the overshadowing, which seems to be a bit the elephant in the room. What's your vision about that, let's say? What's your take on that?
One of our future speakers will discuss the issues of shadowing and what are the net benefits around the shadow we do cast in Queenbridge Square versus the benefits to this new public open space.
Thank you.
So if we can postpone that answer,
certainly,
that'd be appropriate.
Thank you, Nick. Next call on Omar Thorobaka to address the committee. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm Omar Thorobaka from Schwab Architects in New York, and I'm their Director of Government Projects. So since CBUS approached us, what's been most interesting about this opportunity is really the potential to leverage private investment in favor of public good. Schwab's intent has always been to propose a scheme that becomes a catalyst for positive change in your central business district. We have spent a lot of time here in Melbourne figuring out how best to do that. We have listened to people about public space, about the changing urban and social fabric, and about the great public spaces that people in Melbourne enjoy today. There are many projects underway, and more are still to come. We believe that our proposed project, with direct input from MCC and the state staff, can help accomplish some of our mutual goals. This process has already begun. 447 Collins is an opportunity to create a public space gateway. We see it as a new link to the Yarra. The proposed massing creates an urban room that will become a valuable urban amenity. And this destination will be in dialogue with its surroundings. For example, the podium of the building will be in dialogue with the heritage buildings along Collins Street. The mid-rise mass will be in dialogue with the 20th century datum of commercial towers throughout the commercial business district. And the slender upper mass will speak to the future of Melbourne. The public open space design is still in the early stages of development. We welcome to the opportunity to explore how to best serve the city. And we are promoting urban design principles to ensure that the design delivers great public benefits for everyone in Melbourne. These include varied space types and elevations, active and accessible spaces, north-facing and sunlit parks, comfortable wind conditions. These are just a few of the criteria driving the design. I cannot emphasize enough that we are here to engage in a dialogue with the city and the state, and we hope this dialogue will maximize the public open space along with improvements to Market Street. In just a short amount of time, this very image you see on the screen has transformed into a process which points in many positive directions. That process is ongoing, and we hope to obtain your approval to continue developing our scheme. We seek to be responsive with architecture and the design of the public realm. We hope to maximize the public benefit of this new proposed city park for your wonderful city. Thank you.
Any questions for the speaker? I have a question. In terms of the public open space, how much involvement do you see that the City of Melbourne's urban designers and parks and gardens people will have as input into the final product?
A significant amount of input. We've had a couple of preliminary meetings with Rob Adams, and we are prepared to have ongoing meetings on a weekly basis if necessary to discuss anything from the depth required for deep root plantings to the size and slope of all the hardscape incorporated within the project. So it's an open process.
Okay. Yes, Councillor May.
Emma, can you tell us about what's the retail proposal underneath the open space there, the market concept?
Yep. So the market is very much an opportunity to speak about the heritage of the site, the fact that there was once a historic food market within the site. And so because of the opportunity to use the sectional difference between Collins Street, which is 6 meters above Flinders Lane, we can do that underneath the park without creating too many harsh edges that would change access to the park. So along Collins Street, you would come directly off grade onto the park. And as you descend along Market Street, you have another point to enter on grade without any steps or any changes in the grade plan. So the market is really envisioned as an entry point along Flinders Lane, and then you would find your way through the market and then up to the park in a way that we would resolve in conjunction with the city once we start our dialogue.
Okay, Omar. Thank you for that. I would like to call on Sarah Horsfield to address the committee. Sarah, you do have 3 minutes as well.
Thank you. I'm Sarah Horsfield and I'm one of the planning directors at Urbis. I think we would all agree that the planning principle that prohibits overshadowing the south bank of the Yarra has served the city extremely well. It's been one of the key enablers in the realisation of South Bank as one of the city's great success stories. This project breaches that principle, and we know it's a principle that matters to you and it matters to Melbourne, and we don't take it lightly. Now, there's a great deal that I could tell you about the quality of this shadow impact, that it's going to be fast-moving and diffuse, that when you walk through it, it's going to feel very much like you're walking past the shadow cast by the existing trees on the promenade, and that at 2 o'clock, it's actually only going to touch the very western edge of Queensbridge Square and fall partly across the roadway. But I don't think this is a conversation about shadow impacts. I think it's a conversation about what are the right principles to serve Melbourne for the next generation of its evolution of one of the great cities in the world. Now, the Council's open space strategy acknowledges that if we're going to continue to densify the city, you need to offset that with great open space amenity. It focuses a whole lot of attention on the western end of the CBD because, as we all know, it's that part of the city that's currently barren of great public spaces where the community can come together. Now, we have an opportunity here to install a new planning control that locks in an extraordinary gesture of amenity for the city. What I see is a new Federation Square for Melbourne's west. Now, CBUS understands that if we are going to secure the support of council, that there needs to be an assurance that this can't be replicated by others, that this isn't going to be the opening of the floodgates. So, over the past few months, we've actually been working pretty closely with council officers to work up a set of draft planning controls that gives the council the assurance about the commitments that CBUS are prepared to make. And here is the beginning of that control, which we are prepared to incorporate into the planning scheme now. So these become enshrined as locked-in commitments. The first of those is that we will vest 2,000 square metres of new public space in the City of Melbourne, that we will incorporate an urban framework that locks in the current massing and form that you see before you tonight, that we will define very clear design principles that guarantees that this is going to be genuinely world-class in terms of the open space quality and public realm, that it will include requirements for vibrant activation and 24/7 permeability, that we can control the shadow impact by locking in the envelope, and that we will prevent the transfer of this opportunity to anyone other than CBUS. We welcome Council's further input to these commitments, and we would like your support to continue talking to create a new public legacy for Melbourne that's every bit of the success of South Bank.
Thank you. Hold on. I guess councillors may have a question. Yes, Councillor Leppert.
Thank you, Chair. There's a bit of language in your presentation about locking in some planning controls to allow this project to go forward. The draft planning scheme amendment that we've got in our papers talks of approximately 2,000 square metres, so you're indicating that we could look towards locking that in at a minimum of 2,000 square metres so that it's not so discretionary. Is that something that you're open to?
Well, as you've seen tonight, the open space can be as much as 3,500 square metres subject to securing
Market Street. I think 1,000 was on land not inside the property title, but the question was, are you open to tightening up locking in, if you like, using the language you've put,
yes,
what is currently quite discretionary language in the draft planning scheme amendment.
Yes.
Great, thank you.
Councillor Watts?
I take it you're our shadow expert. So, and could you tell us a little bit more about your vision for the overshadowing of with that building coming at one building on top of the other, overshadowing the open space? Can you tell us about that?
Sure. Yeah, look, and I understand that's been a question that has been put to us by the city about what is the quality of this open space that we're offering? Is it going to be actually in shadow for part of the year? And in fact, the diagrams that we have, or the analysis that we've done, show that at the equinox, you get more than 2,000 square metres of great sunlight access. We're also guaranteeing great wind conditions, great solar orientation, and a whole range of other qualities that will assure this is world-class open space. At the winter solstice, which is the very worst impacted time, we've also looked at the shadow impacts, and you still achieve, within that 2,000 square metres of space, you achieve just shy of 900 square metres of pure sunlight access. So that's in the very depths of winter, at its absolute worst. We're still getting just under 50% of that open space in direct sunlight. And that's a pretty good outcome for most open spaces in the middle of winter. So we say we stand up to its integrity as a space that will be usable all year round.
Thank you, Sarah. Lord Mayor.
Thank you. Sarah, my question follows from Councillor Lippitz. You talked about, which you put up for us, the beginning of the controls which you think the development could offer us, and Councillor Lippitz talked about locking it in. Would you be amenable to a month's deferment in order for us to firm that up so that we actually had those things not as proposals but as clearly agreed controls in order to approve this? Would you be amenable to that month's deferment?
Absolutely, and we would invite your commentary and input to those principles. It's a starting point, and we would welcome further input to provide council with the assurance that this is guaranteed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. Councillor Oak, yes, you have a question.
Thanks, Councillor Ong. I do have a question, actually following on from Councillor Watts, and it's actually a question for officers. How do our shadow diagrams of the proposed open space concur with what we've just heard?
Yes. Karen Schneiders from Planning will have a look at our 3D diagrams.
We have got... we have put the building envelope that's been proposed into our 3D model, and we can now...
I don't necessarily need to see that. It's just more... Do you have just a verbal response?
We haven't quantified the shadow impact, but by placing the envelope into the 3D model, during the critical times, which are generally between 11 and 2, so around the lunchtime period when open space is most used, on the winter solstice, there would be overshadowing of that space from existing buildings, which are on the north side of Collins Street, as well as in part from the proposed building envelope as well.
Just taking the question from Councillor Oak for Karen, the shadow diagrams in our 3D model shows that in the winter solstice between 11 and 2, the shadow cast by this proposed form as compared to the Rialto Towers, is the Rialto Tower a broader, wider cast as it is?
The shadow changes because the building forms are quite different, so the shadow cast by the two buildings is quite different.
Which one's larger?
Again, I haven't done an area analysis to be able to say which one is larger, but we can also show that if the councillors were wanting to do that. We
All
have
right.
that available to
now. No, we'll look at that. I have a question for Sarah. I think one of the things that we're looking at taking on from what the Lord Mayor has said, over the next 4 weeks we'll try to lock in the built form, mm-hmm. and all the conditions, open space. Will you take on board that the possibility we put as a condition for the planning scheme amendment C247 a Section 173 agreement that locks all this in place.
Yeah, well, in fact, the control that we're talking about is almost the same as a 173. It gets incorporated into the planning scheme and becomes law. So it has exactly the same binding effect. If that would provide assurance to council, absolutely, because it's watertight and can't be modified except with the consent of the party. So, yes, we would commit to that.
Yeah, thank you. Next call on Tim Shannon. Tim, you have 3 minutes.
Councillor Ong, thank you. Lord Mayor, councillors, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. I'd like to speak to you, if you can accommodate this, on behalf of the City of Melbourne and its future citizens. We're aware that the success of this project will be measured by the generosity and quality of the public open space, which will be its legacy. We're aware that there's a lot at stake, which we can't see on the screen at the present moment. It'd be nice if we could, because we have the opportunity to get a magnificent new space which will connect Collins Street to the river in a way which was not previously imagined. And this space might actually be even better than the one that we're remembering and lamenting the loss of, and which the Lord Mayor helped us remind how important that space is. Or we might get something which is just nice. The image on the right is the just nice, and the image on the left is what the possibility is. We're aware, the elephant in the room that was referred to before, we're aware that there's the likelihood of a shadow being cast on the South Bank. We're aware that from a physiological point of view, this shadow is virtually imperceptible. But we're very acutely aware that from an emotional point of view, this is a matter of great importance which needs to be taken very seriously. And in light of that, we'd ask you to think of how might this negative be turned to a positive. So what if, for example, the space which is affected by this shadow, which is currently a rather barren thoroughfare, was uplifted to become a delightful destination which offered comfort to citizens all through the year? We ask you to think of that because this is the rarest of rare opportunities to get a magnificent new space, and we'd like you to think of ways in which this might become possible rather than be anxious about the things which might prevent it from happening. Finally, I'd like to say on behalf of myself, what a shame if all of us don't do the best we possibly can to realise this extraordinary opportunity. Thanks.
Thank you, Tim. Any questions for Professor Shannon? No. You may take a seat.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm happy to move a motion.
Lord Mayor, yes. Lord Mayor, move the motion that...
Come on.
Would you like to... That second one.
Just scroll it down so the paper can see it.
I'm happy to support that. I'll second that, Lord Mayor.
Thank you. This is a difficult issue. There's no one who questions the bona fides of CBUS and their desire to create something that's iconic in our city, and we know they're long-term holders of property, not land bankers or profit takers. Nevertheless, for us, this is a major public policy principle that the South Bank of the Yarra should not be overshadowed. It has been, that is true, in reality through the Rialto and in prospect through the development at 555 Collins Street, but never with the support of this council. Never with the support of this council. And therefore, for me, I feel that given this is a major public policy departure, it should be considered by us partly in the light of what is before us, but partly in the light of that broader public policy principle. And that's why I would like that month, not a long period of time, but in order to say this is, in effect, a better outcome. Because once we do this, although the argument may be it is constrained to this development only with these benefits for the city, it is nevertheless a precedent of kind. And therefore, for me, things like the inclusion of Market Street in that development is particularly important, that we get that amount of open space. That connector that runs through, as Tim said, down to the river becomes important. The other part is it's difficult for us to consider a planning scheme amendment in isolation from a planning permit. It's as if you're saying, here's a blank cheque, and then we'll wait to see what the bill is later. And that also, if we can bring those things closer together, by, as I said in my questions both to Adrian and to Sarah, if we can lock in those controls, then councillors still may disagree on principle, but at least we'll know what we're disagreeing with on the basis of that principle. What would persuade me is that those elements are locked in and agreed and delivered in order to breach this major public policy view of council. And that's why, for me, a month to look at the issues that are there, and that's not to say in any way that 9.1 agrees with overshadowing, because it does not yet. It does not. It says it's one of the elements to be considered. But I need to have greater assurance on the side of what will be delivered against the assurance of what we would be offering, and that is an overshadowing. So I hope we can work in good faith together over the next month to do a very specific view of what the benefits would be, and at that point I feel I would be prepared to make a decision about this major public policy issue of overshadowing of the south bank of the Yarra. I want to thank the CBUS team for the seriousness with which they have addressed this matter and considered our concerns. I think that does them very great credit, as a matter of fact, and I'm very happy to work with them and our officers over the next month to see what specificity we can bring to this proposal. The second part of it, I think, is very important, that we actually converse with the minister to say, do nothing yet, because we are continuing good faith discussions with the proponent, and I'm very keen that the minister should know this is not some delaying tactic, nor is it for a long period of time. So with those comments, I'm happy to propose with the very welcome agreement of Urbis and CBUS that a month would be an appropriate period to work through these issues.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. As seconded, I'll put some comments in. I agree with what the Lord Mayor has said. This is not just a planning application. This is something that we don't normally do. It's a site-specific planning scheme amendment to incorporate a scheme. And what we can see in the current report, officers can only work within the framework of what the planning scheme allows. And the issue goes beyond what the planning officers can do, which means it's a policy decision that only the councillors can make. And that's something that we need to understand some more details. It's clear that the city's own open space strategy has an aspiration to create open space of a significant size within the city. It is also clear that what we have here is an issue that we don't normally go to. That's overshadowing of the South Bank. The fact that it's been done in the past, before with the Rialto, and that the, as the Lord Mayor mentioned, the possibility that 555 Collins could have such an impact as well is something that we will come to sometime in the future. But what we have before us is competing needs, competing objectives of the council, and even when you look at the report that's presented to us, there are also conflicting views from within council, because there are a lot of pluses and there are a lot of issues that we don't have a lot of room to maneuver. And I hope that this next 4 weeks we'll be able to nut them all out, lock it in, and we make a conscious decision as a council how far do we go outside the current planning rules because of, I'd say, a benefit to the public open space. The reality is this, the question needs to be asked, is there anywhere along the CBD, whether it's Collins Street, whether it's Burke Street, that we could find another site where we can have 3,000 to 3,500 square metres of open space? And I think that's will answer the question of, will this set a precedent? And I think that's the other challenge that we still need to think about. I commend the team from CBUS, you know, coming to talk to us and are willing to accept that you won't get a decision tonight. We've got a lot more work to do, and hopefully within by the time we come back in a few weeks, we're in a position to have a firm outcome. Councillor Mayne.
So let's start off with a question for Professor Adams. That's right. Rob, as head of city design, you've obviously spent decades looking at these issues of both shadowing and open space. Can we hear your views? What's your opinion on what you've heard tonight about this trade-off question about shadowing and obviously securing potentially 3,500 of new open space?
Through you, Chair. I think as Councillor Ong has quite clearly said, we've got a conflict here between two competing principles. The opportunity, and we've looked at it, for open space in the city is becoming less and less possible. The only other opportunities that we can see are churches that have significant land holdings around them, and they are, in fact, looking to develop those themselves. So we have got a problem with delivering open space. It is something that needs to be looked at seriously. I think, as has been shown this evening, it's not only this open space, it's the adjacencies of the Immigration Museum, the North Bank, that whole link down to the Yarra, that makes it bigger than just this site. And I think that's something that the council needs to look at seriously in their considerations.
Mm. Councillor Mayne, any statements?
Yeah, okay. I'll vote in favour of the adjournment tonight. My personal preference would have been actually to approve something more supportive. And actually put council on the record saying that we support the concept and that the securing of the open space is a very important outcome to be able to achieve. But in doing so, there are some issues, obviously, with the overshadowing and potentially the envelope, which may need to be looked at. Maybe going all the way to 300 metres is perhaps a little bit too high. But overall, I think that I hope that the Minister is equally supportive. He set a very interesting precedent at 555 Collins, which was almost all the way to City Road in overshadowing and no ameliorating factors such as securing open space. So I think in terms of precedents being set, the Minister's set one up, and that site's since been flicked for $78 million to someone else. So very pleased to hear Sarah's comments about the it can only be CBUS, that there's not going to be some planning benefit given and then the site sold. It's really good to hear everyone's views tonight, all the different speakers. I think it's good that this has only been public since Thursday. It's probably one of the boldest proposals we've seen in decades in terms of what's been aspired to here. And I look forward to hopefully the council and CBUS reaching a position where there can be solid support and we can almost, if you like, go to both the Environment Minister in terms of the Crown land, which the state controls in Market Street, we can go there with a joint position, which says we see this vision, we're all signed up to it, we want to get the state on board and potentially have a transformative proposal for a site which, frankly, now is an absolute eyesore and has been for a couple of years. And we need to kick this one along to get a development on this site at the moment, which is barricaded up is a very unpleasant site on Collins Street. So I really appreciate CBUS's efforts in this bold proposal and look forward to hopefully the council and officers being able to support advancing this concept to a fulfilment stage.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. Any other councillors like just Councillor Leppard? You're speaking for her.
I'm speaking to the motion. Okay. I don't have to tell you how I'm voting. No, I will support this motion, Chair. I've always supported deferrals where there's a demonstrated goodwill between parties to progress an issue towards consensus, and so I'll vote for the deferral again on that basis. The deferral should my vote shouldn't be read necessarily as an intention to vote for something in the future. I know that part two of this motion looks as though we're all trying our hardest to find something that the council will support, and so I moderate my comments a bit from the previous speakers because I'm not necessarily wanting to give a strong or a weak indication in that regard. I don't know if I can reconcile this issue of yet again breaking this precedent of overshadowing the South Bank of the area in exchange for what is obviously a good return to the community, which is new open space in the city. So I don't want my vote to be at all an indication of what might come in future, but as I said, the deferral is to facilitate consensus, and so I'm very happy to support the deferral. We do have to take a step back, though. There's the pictures that we've seen today have no status in the planning scheme amendment that we're being asked to consider tonight. We have to remember that the report that's been put to us and the recommendation from management is actually just a consideration of the document, which is the planning scheme amendment draft that's been given to the City of Melbourne for comment. The pictures are great. There's a bold proposal here, as Councillor Main says, and it's a very interesting proposal that I would like to spend a bit more time understanding. But the planning scheme amendment before us doesn't facilitate exactly that. In fact, it's very discretionary. It says approximately 2,000 square metres needs to be delivered. It doesn't say exactly where that needs to be. And there are other discretionary things in there. So I agree with the Lord Mayor that we can't agree, or we can't tell the Minister that it's a good planning scheme amendment without also knowing exactly what's proposed for that site and understanding exactly how all of these conditions can be locked in, because it's quite an unusual, it's an extraordinary proposal, and we'd be doing the wrong thing if we were to agree to the planning scheme amendment as it is, because it doesn't lock anything in, really. And so we would just be breaking that precedent yet again of overshadowing the South Bank of the Yarra. And we heard from Mr. Penner from the South Bank Residents Group during question time saying, you know, we need a bit more from council about your plan for open space in South Bank. Well, this proposal will make current open space in South Bank of slightly less quality, considerably less quality for certain times of the day. So we shouldn't be launching into that. So I'll end where I began, which is that I don't want to indicate where I might land in a month's time, but on the basis that there could be more work done here, and Council may or may not be presented with something that's quite specific. I'm happy to see where that goes, but can't give any indication as to what I like, because I'm very, very, very nervous about breaking this precedent of overshadowing the South Bank of the Yarra and making open space in South Bank of a lower quality.
Excuse me. Councillor Watts.
Yes, thank you.
You're speaking to the motion or against it?
I'm speaking to the motion.
Thank you.
By and large, it seems a good solution in the short term, but what I would like to register is my puzzlement that we seem to be fixated on the open space and the shadowing. Well, I would like to... I'm very pleased to hear how flexible and prepared to work with us CBUS are, but I'm not hearing anything at all about the design itself, which is overshadowing the open space that we're all talking about adjacent to the building, and the height of which is going a long way into South Bank. If we're going to be flexible, can we not be flexible around the design itself? I'm not sure, for example, how many pocket squares in New York are shadowed to this extent. It seems to me that it's an excessive building. I look forward to some regard for the overshadowing in itself, not necessarily the overshadowing. The regulation around it.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Would any other speakers like to speak for the motion? Anyone want to speak against the motion?
I'll speak for the thank you.
Oh, you can't, Deputy Lord Mayor, speaking to the motion.
I'm speaking
for this motion. To me, it makes good common sense to allow these parties to have 4 weeks to come up with different solutions. This block or 433 Collins Street has been an eyesore for many, many years, and I think everyone in this room would be anxious to make sure that we get the right outcome. And to give the 4 weeks just to define the envelope of this space and to come up with the right answers or answers that can be acceptable and worked upon makes good sense.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. On that note, would the Lord Mayor like to close discussions? If not, I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour of the motion, raise your hands. I declare it carried unanimously. Thank you, everyone. Okay. All right, now we will... The first item... Thank you. And then there will be some seats made up, and some of you can move up to the empty seats. Thank you. All those in the corridor, please come and take the seats in the front. There's more seats on that side, please.
Everyone's got a seat.
Yep. Plenty of seats on the first and second row.
Councillor Scanlon can fit one in too.
Okay, we've all settled in. We can now proceed to agenda item 6.2, which is the HODL grid residential development contributions. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No? In that case, I'll call a councillor to move a motion. Councillor Mayne, move.
I'd like to move a slightly amended motion, which appears now on the screen.
Happy to second that. Councillor Mayne.
Okay, thanks, Councillor Ong. This item of business is responding to a notice of motion a few weeks ago asking the officers to look at the question of whether we at the City of Melbourne should introduce a developer contribution scheme within the HODL grid. Obviously, we've seen record amounts of growth in the HODL grid. The City of Melbourne's population grew by 11.5% last year, which was the highest percentage growth of any council area in Australia. And much of that is very much concentrated in the HODL grid. This obviously creates infrastructure pressures, and the report that we're considering tonight identifies a potential cost of $26.54 million to deliver the necessary community infrastructure that will be required by this remarkable and unprecedented level of population growth, particularly in the HODL grid. So the officers have come back and we asked the officers whether we should approach the State Planning Minister and request that he introduce a developer contribution scheme that would apply in the HODL grid. We are currently going through planning scheme amendments looking to introduce developer contribution schemes for the City North zone, heading up towards Carlton and for South Bank, but nothing in the HODL grid. So the report has come back from officers recommending that we go for the level of $900 per apartment, which is the current maximum, if you like, with the current planning rules in Victoria. The report does look at what applies in other states, and it does point out that in Sydney and Brisbane, they have much, much higher levels of developer contributions. that a three-bedroom apartment in Brisbane, you'll be paying $27,000, not $900. And in Sydney, the model is actually 1% of a development cost. So CBUS, if they were in Sydney, would be up for a $10 million developer contribution on their proposed $1 billion vision. And under our current rules, I'm not sure that CBUS would be paying anything for their proposals to the City of Melbourne. So we are a very low tax environment or regime, if you like, in the City of Melbourne. And what this slightly amended motion is proposing is that we ask the Minister to immediately introduce a $900 per dwelling scheme, and that we ask that this be implemented from the 1st of September. So for those items, for those applications which are currently in the pipeline, either they've already been lodged, if the Minister was to follow this advice and the permit was issued on September the 2nd, then that would be captured and the very modest $900 per apartment developer contribution would come to the City of Melbourne, and we would use that to help fund growing needs for community infrastructure. So the Minister has shown he's very enthusiastic about developer contributions. He, as he quoted in the weekend press, has set up the biggest one in Australia at Fisherman's Bend, proposing to raise hopefully hundreds of millions with a very high level of close to 16,000 per apartment there. So our neighbours in Moreland and Darabin are already doing, I think it's around $800, $850 developer contributions. So this is a very modest proposal, and I hope the Minister supports it, and I hope that my colleagues around the table will support it. I'd like to thank the officers for diligently working up all of the data and reporting back in a timely manner to enable us to make this decision, and I certainly support what the officers are recommending, which is this move to a very, very, very modest $900 proposal in the first instance.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. As the seconder, I support what has been said and also what the report has provided as the background. I think if I take us back to 2009-10, when we first started working, or when we started to finalise the MSS, and we look at the growth area, City North, Arden, Macaulay, and South Bank, we started putting structure plans in those places. And then followed when MSS was approved in August 2012, we started working on some of these open space strategies, and we found that we actually didn't have enough money to do a lot of the work we need to do, including community infrastructure, which we then led to doing C208 and C209, focusing on South Bank and City North. We had to park Adam Macaulay due to some uncertainties regarding East-West. What we didn't realise that the biggest growth area within the municipality was the City of Melbourne's central grid, the CBD areas and within the HODL grid, until we looked at the results of last year. The population increase, as Councillor Mayne have said, changed our projections in terms of what's going to look like in 2031, in terms of what we need to build in the city, because it's not about just tall buildings and lots of people. It's about what happens when the people hits the city streets. What are the things they need to do? What are the amenities and services we need to provide? And we have been pushing this for a few months. A lot of work's been done by the officers, and I thank them for that. I think what's important is we can go through a normal process of trying to get a planning scheme amendment to put this into the Melbourne planning scheme, and we know from experience that could take us 2 years. In 2 years, there'll be another 6,000 apartments approved in the City of Melbourne, and we'll miss the boat. By doing it this way, which is allowable, I think it's, and doing it quick, yes, the property industry might have a go at us saying we're just going to add cost to them, but it's not about adding cost to them. All the property developers who are doing projects in the City of Melbourne are actually making a good living out of the city. We are just asking them to contribute back in terms of the future and the current residents of the city, in terms of amenities and services. I think what's important too is to say that if we do this quick, there's a lot of applications going to come in. If we don't do this and we set a later date, And we don't make it such that if the application is in the system but not yet approved, it's excluded, because we don't want to have a rush of applications coming in on 31st of August if we don't exclude all applications that are not approved. I think that's a very important thing, because if you want to be serious about this, let's do this first and then wait for July next year when we see how the statewide planning system implements the $4,500 for growth areas. Because 10.3 says that we are currently not designated as a strategic development area, but looking at the current situation, we think it should be, and therefore we'll need the minister to actually do that designation. That will enable us to look at higher contributions into the future. The report's very clear. There's a lot to be done, and the $900 doesn't collect enough to do that work. Any other councillors like to speak to that? Councillor Oakes.
Thank you, Councillor Ong. I follow both yourself and the mover, Councillor Main, in supporting this resolution. I thank Councillor... I feel like this microphone's miles away. I thank Councillor Main for bringing the original recommendation to us, the resolution that we passed that the officers have responded to very quickly, and I thank them for doing so. As Councillor Ong points out, this is something that we need to act on as fast as possible, and maybe we should have already done so, but now we are, and this is the best process to do that. The only thing to add, because I believe that both councillors have already articulated the reasons why I support this, but is to add, and again, I think I said this last time when the resolution was put, there's nothing more infuriating when developers come to our council planning meetings and present their great visions of greater density in the city, which I'm not necessarily opposed to, but they present this and they say that the city is ripe for density, the city is ripe for more people, but they don't present in any of their plans how they're going to accommodate community infrastructure, how they're going to actually support other facilities within the city to support the people that they're saying that the city is ripe to accommodate. So we need to get some assurance from these developers through this very modest contribution that Councillor Main pointed out, very modest contribution towards our community infrastructure, and it's an agenda item later on tonight, our community infrastructure framework, that does point out, as it does in this report, the critical need for spending in the CBD on community infrastructure. And we only need to look at the city library and see that it is, I believe, the busiest library in the world, I think, or something, one of those statistics in Australia, world. it is at capacity anyway. But anyway, I wholeheartedly support this and thank Councillor Main and officers for bringing it to us.
Thank you, Councillor. Any councillors like to speak against this motion? Any councillors for the motion? If not, Councillor Mayne, would you like to close? Oh, yes, Lord Mayor would like to speak to the motion.
Thank you. I'm going to speak in supporting this motion, and it's going to sound awfully like I'm speaking against this motion. For a start, let's disabuse the notion this is a developer contribution. It is not. It will be passed straight through to the purchasers of these residential units. Simple as that. And while it's okay to say it's $900, it's not very much. Remember, you know, we can't bang on one hand about housing affordability and then make it less affordable for these units to be developed to the knowledge economy who are taking them up. So let's disabuse the notion this is a developer contribution. It's not CBUS who will pay this. It's not the developers who will pay this. It is the end purchasers of the units. It will drive up the cost of buying a unit in the city. And you know, we've got to be honest about that. I take the work that the officers have done in provision of infrastructure. You'd have to say the HODL grid is not short of infrastructure, but they've done good work on the extra that is needed. Could I also point out we're a little fey when it comes to recognising that, in fact, we do derive great financial benefit from these developments because they then all pay rates. You know, all of these units all pay rates. And so we garner an enormous amount of revenue from this development through our rating exercise. And with that, we are actually supposed to provide community infrastructure. So let's not forget that. And finally, I would certainly hope that the city is an SDA. Of course, it should be, and I support 10.3. You can't compare us to Fisherman's Bend. You know, Fisherman's Bend doesn't have any community infrastructure, and it is going to be a distorted market anyway. We need to learn from the lessons of Docklands, but remember that the HODL grid is a different kettle of fish altogether. But I would just make that final point, that we shouldn't console ourselves with the fiction that this is a contribution by developers. It is directly passed to the purchasers of those residential units, and it is those purchasers who will pay this levy.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Councillor Mayne, would you like to close?
Yes, I'm very impressed by the Lord Mayor's ability to predict the market price. The people will pay what the market decides. And if a developer has to take a $900 cut to his margin or her margin to get a sale, that is what will happen. And so I completely reject the idea that there will be a singular response. The market will determine that, and if developers have to change their prices... No, I think that it will be an amalgam. There will be an element of pass-through, there will be an element of margin contraction. The developers will always charge as much as they possibly can. I think that's the one thing you can be guaranteed of. And as for the question of that they contribute rates, I think there's a very important statistic to respond to the Lord Mayor on, in that since Postcode 3000 was adopted in 1992, we have cut the rate in the dollar that we have charged apartment owners and everyone from close to 12 cents to 4 cents. So we have not, like the state government has done with land tax, banked an almighty windfall by continuing the same percentages for 15 years. And that is why land tax is now going to hit a record $1.9 billion this year. We continue to cut the tax rate because we have more residents out there and more people contributing to the rates. So I would argue that all of these people who have moved into these new apartments have not provided a windfall. And indeed, our budget, our end-of-year financials will be debating later on tonight, show that we've had more than 2 million of objections, and we've lost 2 million of revenue from objections and people objecting to their rates in the last year. So this hasn't been a bonanza of rate revenue from benevolent dictators and their client customers who buy their apartments. And therefore, there is an argument that this very modest levy is an appropriate additional revenue stream to help us satisfy the challenges of being the fastest growing city local government area in Australia as measured by percentage population growth in 2013.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. On that note, I'll put this to the vote. All those in favour, please raise their hands, and all the hands are up. It's carried unanimously. So I'll now call on Councillor Foster to assume the role of the chair of the meeting in relation to the people City portfolio.
Thank you very much, Councillor Ong. Busy night for the People's City portfolio tonight with three agenda items, the first of which, agenda item 6.3, Melbourne for All People 2014-17. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No? Okay. In that case, I'll move the motion on the screen.
Sorry, Chair, do you mind if I move an alternative motion? Or I can move an amendment to yours.
That's fine. Maybe you... All right. Do you want to amend this?
If you would like to move this motion, I can suggest words so that you can continue to be the mover, and then a seconder, I can suggest words. That way you can carry the motion if you'd like. I'd like to suggest the wording that we can scroll down and have a look at. And move, if you're happy with that, I'd be happy to second that motion. Or if you'd like, I can just move it in my name.
No, I'm happy with that. And I'm presuming then that you are seconding. Councillor Leppett, thank you. All right, I'll just speak briefly. I'm sure Councillor Leppett will want to say something as well. So, the Melbourne for All People basically incorporates four existing plans and strategies into one overarching document. It assists us, I think, to provide some continuity across many different initiatives that Council delivers and supports, and importantly across a range of services and policy areas that are very much local government responsibilities, but they're responsibilities that in the past the City of Melbourne has discharged expertly, and I think this document will help us to continue to do that. It's also an enabling document and one that links together our responses to key needs in the community, responses to things like homelessness, to violence against women, responses to the needs of young people, and very importantly, responses to our Indigenous community. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for facilitating this motion being put in this way. I think it's quite right that you're moving the substantive motion as portfolio holder, but thank you. I think there's a few changes here which I'll now speak to. I agree, and I think I agree with Councillor Foster, and I thank officers for what's been a huge amount of work to get us to this point. We have had four strategies into one. There are hundreds of actions in those previous four strategies, and there's quite a much smaller number in the Melbourne for All People strategy that we're being asked to endorse tonight. There's six themes, and most of those themes have four actions. So what we've arrived at is a strategy which is substantially at a higher level than what those previous four strategies have been. Now, that's not bad per se. The issue I have is that I'm worried about the public line of sight to the commitments that the City of Melbourne has to that next level of detail down that work that was in the previous four strategies but that isn't in this strategy. So part three of this motion is the most important part. That is that we're going to request that the implementation plan for this strategy, including the measures so that we can see whether or not we're succeeding in implementing the strategy, is brought back to us in November. I've had a discussion with officers and I understand that the sort of level of detail that was found in the previous four strategies is just the sort of thing that will come back through that implementation plan when we look at it in November. And so the motion that's up here that we're considering now is a way of providing again that public line of sight to all of the commitments that the City of Melbourne has in the space of disability, young people, children and the ageing. So that's the reason for adding part three, and I commend that addition of the motion to fellow councillors. I do note that that aligns with the one written submission that we had specifically to this meeting, worrying about that lack of oversight, so I'm hoping that this overcomes that. The only other comment, and then I'll come back to positive because I know that I'm griping on a couple of issues here, is that the way that this report has come back to us with the external consultancy report is that the themes of the consultation have been reported back to us, but it's quite difficult for us to engage with any specific comments that were made during that public consultation strategy. And that's a little bit frustrating for me now that we're being asked to consider this as decision makers. It's something that we'll need to grapple with going forward because whilst I know that there's a huge amount of work that's been done and whilst I trust that what's being reported back to us is fairly representative of how those public consultations went, we're engaging with it at a very high conceptual level and it's very difficult to actually understand what the specific issues that came through that public engagement process were. So it's a conversation for another day, but I do just put that on the record. The other tweaks to part one here is because I think that in the transition from four strategies to one, the youth policy is the one that got the raw end of the deal a little bit. There's a bit less about youth than there are about the other four areas. The main one there is the paragraph 1.2. We do have a lot of programs which provide training and meaningful employment pathways for marginalised young people, but that dropped out of the strategy, so I'm just asking that we put it back in. But as I said at the beginning, the main point is that we will be having a look at that next level of detail down in by November when we look at the implementation plan. And with those few gripes aside, I finish where I started and thank officers for the huge amount of work and for everyone who's participated in the community engagement framework and look forward to implementing this very significant strategy going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Lippitt. Would any other councillor like to speak to the motion? Yes. Councillor Watts.
I just like to comment that I'm pleased to see reference to our city being welcoming to refugees, using the specific word refugee, now appears in the document. That pleases me. I personally have difficulty with the lifespan approach. I think it's not that straightforward for the public to perhaps comprehend and I encourage people to read it in detail to get a really grasp of what we're trying to do here in presenting this document in this form. There are difficulties for me around, for example, the gender equity issue and the disability issue, which can't be categorised across the lifespan as readily as you might first imagine in this document. By and large, it's a very interesting construct and works at most levels, but For me, there are still a few difficulties with it, but nevertheless, I'm pleased to see it in this form.
Thank you, Councillor. What's with any other councillor like to speak to the motion? Anyone to speak against the motion? Okay, in that case, I'll just sum up briefly. Firstly, thank you to Councillor Leppett for suggesting what he has there. It is important to track the implementation of such a broad-ranging policy, so a very good improvement, I think. Thank you also to Councillor Watts for her work with officers in incorporating the needs of refugees and asylum seekers in our community that I think are often overlooked, and frankly, I think this is the very, very least that we can do in that area. And of course, thank you to Councillor officers, especially Jane Foley, who I know has worked enormously hard on this document, and I think by and large it's a very good outcome. Indeed, it's a world first document as far as we know for a local government. It's not easy to pull together such a broad ranging document, so it's probably no surprise that not too many other people around have had a stab at it. It's one that directs our focus to a whole of life strategy, as Councillor Watts rightly pointed out, and as she reminded us, it's something that is to be understood. It's something that we do need to get across, and I know that council officers are certainly in that space. So on that note, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? It's carried unanimously. Agenda item 6.4, Pathways Homelessness Strategy 2014-17. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No? Okay. In that case, I'll call on Major Brendan Nottle, who's requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter. Brendan, if you would like to take the podium, and you have 3 minutes. Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity to share with you this evening, just briefly, and I have just a couple of brief dot points. First of all, I'd like to say that the Salvation Army genuinely values the support of the City of Melbourne, especially around this issue of homelessness, and we see the City of Melbourne as an absolute critical partner in addressing this very important issue in the city. However, there are two very difficult issues that we are currently facing at the moment, and I talk about these issues from a very personal perspective because I'm actually engaged in being out on the streets and seeing what's happening. The two issues that I'd like to talk about briefly are Enterprise Park and the power station, which is located in the Fitzroy Gardens. The issue around Enterprise Park is significant because prior to the death of Wayne Perry in January this year, there were 3 to 4 people living there, and the number jumped to 14 to 20. And we've been at work trying to resolve that issue, and the numbers have fluctuated, but it's been very, very difficult to break the entrenchment of the homelessness that's happening down there. The issue with the substation has around 12 to 15 people sleeping rough every night, and the issue is significantly entrenched and requires a significant amount of work. I have to say, these two areas, Enterprise Park and the power station, caused me significant worry and concern. The issues have received and continue to need the significant input of the City of Melbourne, Victoria Police, and a whole range of agencies working together. It's the only way we'll resolve these issues. Homelessness in the city is a cyclical problem, and we need every effort to reduce it, and we need to be realistic, especially around wanting to end homelessness. And I'll speak about this because last Wednesday night, I was out on our outreach van, and I come across probably one of the most horrific scenes I've seen since I've been working in the city over the past 11 years. There was a woman living in a humpy, that's the best way to describe it, surrounded by rubbish. And I was stunned when she popped up over the top of this rubbish. She's suffering from severe mental health issues. She's a victim of domestic violence. And it's an issue that says to me that if we have a target or if we have this desire to end homelessness, perhaps we're being overly ambitious because the issues are so significant and so cyclical and so entrenched. I think perhaps we're wasting our time on setting those targets. What we need rather than a target is a steely resolve and focus to continue to address the issue of homelessness and to make sure that we always keep the main thing, which is to provide accommodation with all of the supports that people need to get back on their feet that are currently homeless. Thanks for your time.
Well, thank you very much, Brendan, and I think those insights are invaluable. Did anybody have any questions for Brendan?
I have a question. Your understanding of the strategy that we're endorsing tonight, do you believe it does go to addressing the concerns that you've raised, in particular around those two locations?
Yeah, I think probably the point that I want to make is that we have to make sure that all of our resources go into those locations. And rather than having a focus on ending homelessness or setting targets, we need to understand that we've put an enormous amount of effort into those two areas and the homeless issue continues to be there. We get it down to a low figure and then it expands. So we have to understand that this is an issue which is evident in all cities, I think, around the world, and it's been evident in this city for a long time, and we need to continue to go back and address that, not give up on it.
Thanks again, Brendan. Any other questions? Okay, thanks very much. Okay, I'll move the motion on the screen. Is there a seconder? Councillor Ruck? Was that a hand?
Yeah,
okay. All right, thanks very much. Well, it's certainly, homelessness certainly is a policy area receiving much attention this year, and as Major Noddle pointed out, the tragic death of Wayne Perry certainly contributed to that early this year. Look, it's an issue that has no easy answers. Again, I know Brendan has touched on this, but it's important, obviously, that we have an outlook towards it, that we have a focus on it, and that we have strategies in place to deal with an ongoing problem as best we can. It calls for responses that do go beyond band-aid measures, and this strategy has a very strong transitional focus, which I think is important. Moving people out of homelessness and facilitating that transition has to be a priority. As the homeless population fluctuates, strategies like this go, or will go, I believe, a long way to, again, moving people in and through homelessness. And the in bit is not the thing that we can always control, but the hopefully moving people out of homelessness is something that we can have a genuine impact on. So this strategy does focus very heavily on pathways out of homelessness, which I believe is appropriate. It also focuses heavily on the most at risk of homelessness, and those are, of course, women and children, and there's already been great efforts by the City of Melbourne focused in that direction. I think this strategy just goes to amplify those. Councillor Roach.
Thank you, Councillor Foster. I support our strategy, and I thank the officers for all the work that they've done in preparing it and the consultation process that occurred. I think it's great that at the start of this report we do talk about the achievements that we have made so far. It was a strong commitment of the last council to focus our efforts on homelessness, and I'd like to acknowledge Major Brendan Nottle for a lot of the work that he did with the council and other providers, of course, but many of the great projects and the initiatives that are listed here were in partnership with Brendan and the Salvation Army. And I know there's some definitely an awe that you bring, is not only just because you're the Melburnian of the Year, Brendan, as you enter the room, but I'm always in awe of what you do for our city, and I thank you for that. But the new strategy is important, as Councillor Foster says. It does focus our attention on particularly vulnerable groups, and that is important. And it's not an easy task ahead of us, but we can only achieve what we can. But we can only do that also in partnership with the organisations in the city who are also on this mission to not end homelessness necessarily. And I think you articulated that very well, Brendan, in that it's not about setting targets such as those, but it's about finding those pathways and finding appropriate actions that we can actually achieve and focusing our resources appropriately. So I think you've articulated that well, and I believe our strategy does. And it's no small task ahead of us and our officers, but I think that we're well equipped to do so, and our achievements to date show that we definitely can meet those initiatives. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. Would any other councillor like to speak to the motion? Councillor Ong.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Major Brendan Noddle. Being a second-term councillor, we've seen a lot of work done over the years by council, the previous council, under the chair, previous chair, Jennifer Kennis, and now under Councillor Foster in the offices. This strategy, you know, it covers all the actions that the city wants to do, that it can do in partnership with government, with the agencies, and try to manage this issue of homelessness as best as it can. What we can't do is to prevent or as was suggested by some of the feedback, to end homelessness. Because as Major Brendan Nordahl said, it is cyclical. Because we actually don't have any control over the root cause of what leads to homelessness. We cope with what's the outcomes that ends up in the city as they are presented to us. Because the reasons, as was indicated in the report, are numerous. There are family issues, there are economic issues, there are health issues, mental health issues, there are drug and alcohol issues, and a whole series of them that contribute towards the unfortunate outcome that homeless people present themselves to us. I think it is also true to say, from my own nearly 6 years here and some of my fellow councillors and Lord Mayor, the city itself is also presenting as, in search of a better word, a magnet for people who are looking for help and assistance. With the Salvation Army, the City of Melbourne Services, its partnerships with City Mission and some of the other agencies and the emergency housing agencies, we actually have the services here. Many other municipalities don't. So it becomes our responsibility to try to do the best we can to help these people. The pathway out of homelessness, some of them choose to remain that way. And there are others that I've come across in the work that we are together with the Salvation Army and also with City Mission, that we have found opportunities for some of these people to actually find a better life. And that's what makes us feel that we've achieved something, because this battle and challenge goes on forever. I don't believe there is a target you can say we will end homelessness, because I don't believe it's realistic. And I agree with the Major. So I guess I commend the amount of work done. This work will continue well beyond the time when some of us are not here in council, because it's our responsibility as the capital city. They come in here, they need help, we do what we can. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Ong. Would any other councillor like to speak to the motion? Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor. Could I also echo what previous speakers have said? I'm very proud of both this council and the previous one for the homelessness focus that councillors have brought. And I echo Councillor Ong's commendation of Councillor Jennifer Kennis, who works so assiduously in this area. I'm also pleased that the strategy details, you know, what we've done, the common ground, 161 apartments, the 700,000 for the community health service at the Drill Hall, the 59 apartments that are made available through Housing Choices of Australia, our models like through Boyd School with affordable housing. All of those things, though, tell me that it's about the partnerships we have in place. That's what really delivers for us. And I can tell you, as this year as chair of the Council of Capital City Lord Mayors, I don't think there's any other city in Australia that has the depth of the relationships with the service sector that Melbourne has. And we're very, very lucky to have that. So whether it is you know, the Salvation Army and my friend Brendan Nottle, or Duta Gala, or the Royal District Nursing Service, or Second Bite, or Front Yard, or Winteringham, or Home Ground, or Street, you know, the many partners that we bring together that doesn't always happen in other cities. When I looked at the street count this year, the big thing for me was not about the count itself. It was more that when we did the count in 2012, I think it was around 57% of people who said they would access some sort of service during the course of that day, that 24 hours. This year, 87% of people said they would access some service during the course of that 24-hour period, which shows me that regardless of numbers, we have got those partnerships where people are engaging. And that, to me, they're the real outcomes. But we have to be careful. I think, you know, with the best of intentions, the Rudd government committed over $1 billion to the National Partnership Agreement on Homelessness. And, you know, they set goals that unfortunately were simply not met, like they were going to reduce homelessness by 7% by 2012. And in fact, the National Auditor General, the Australian National Audit Office, found that homelessness in fact increased by 17%. And what the Auditor General pointed to was that you've got to have a focus on achievement, on measurement, on outcomes, on quality, and that only comes through partnerships and collaboration. So developing our partnerships, to me, becomes very important in this strategy, that we're not doing it alone. We're doing it with the state government, we're doing it with the national government, and most importantly, we're doing it with a range of other partners, and we bring more of those in, whether it's VECI to provide employment opportunities for young people, or Magpie Nest with the Collingwood Football Club, which is already with 56 beds in 20 houses, already housed 104 different people as an initiative just of the club with Brendan Nottle. I think that that imperative of working closely with the entirety of the sector will be the most helpful thing for us in dealing with homelessness in our city.
Thank you. Would any other councillor like to speak to the motion? Anyone to speak against the motion? You'd really hope not, wouldn't you? All right, in that case, I'll quickly wrap it up. I'd just like to make mention of a number of other submitters, and I think there's been one significant part. I was going to say very small, but it's not. It's a significant part that could have been in a strategy like this, and that is the issue of targets that have been mentioned a few times tonight. And there have been differing views in the welfare sector around whether or not that is something appropriate to do. I think the example of the Rudd government's efforts in that department was a good one, because clearly they didn't pay off. Conversely, efforts by the City of Sydney, which set an arguably completely unreasonable target of ending homelessness by 2017, certainly didn't achieve, or is not likely to achieve, an end to homelessness by then. But it has halved their numbers of homelessness since that target was set in 2007. So I think a part of having targets and having aims is not necessarily to nail them 100%, but to keep your eye on the ball and to keep heading towards an achievement of that target, because while you're doing that, you are still improving the situation and achieving something. Nonetheless, we do have targets in this strategy, and it's not about ending homelessness absolutely, but they are important nonetheless, and namely the target to assist at least 100 women and children at risk of or experiencing homelessness as a result of family violence, I think, is enormously important, a very important target to have. As Brendan rightly pointed out earlier, responding to homelessness means you do need to understand it. It's with eternal thanks to Brendan and others in the sector that we are, I think, understanding more about homelessness these days, more about its causes and more about how to respond to it. Since holding this portfolio, I've been out with services in the city and seen their work up front. I've also spent a shift with our local police here in the CBD overnight on one weekend, which I've got to say was eye-opening, to say the least. And one story that I'll share with you from that experience was the story of a young 16-year-old girl who was prostituting herself in nightclubs in the city simply for a place to stay. And that's, as bad as that sounds, what adds to the gravity of that story is the fact that the young girl concerned also suffered leukaemia and was presenting herself at St Vincent's Hospital for treatment every week. Now, that raised to me one huge question, and that is, how is somebody like this, engaged with public services for the treatment of her illness, falling through cracks like that, and relying heavily on the services that are walking up and down streets like Brendan's, helping kids like her, yet she's engaged with the public health system? What it says to me is that we haven't got everything right, and there is a real role for local government to play here in trying to tighten up those cracks as best we can. On that basis, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? It's carried unanimously. Thank you. Agenda item 6.5, Community Infrastructure Development Framework 2014. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? Okay, I now call on Anthony Vanderkratz, who's requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter, to speak for no more than 3 minutes, Anthony.
Lord Mayor and councillors, just a reflection on the previous topic. Thank you. The City of Melbourne and its budget spends four times more on fireworks than it does on homelessness. I think that's worth noting. Five of the Melbourne City Councillors live in the North Melbourne Kensington precinct. the rest live virtually outside the city, some close to the borders of the city. My concern, yet again, and I'd like to remind the council, I'll try and be brief, is that the council has done very little in consideration. There's no real infrastructural proposals for the south of the Yarra, particularly in South Yarra itself, until 2017. This is an ongoing concern. I think this report's somewhat misleading because it fails to take into consideration the residential precinct between Queen's Road and St Kilda Road, which should be really brought into the broader picture. This is probably a failure of the ERMAP system, or probably most likely it's a failure of Leonie Burke when she drew up the boundaries of the City of Melbourne. The City of Melbourne should very much take that precinct into consideration in some form, if need be, in consultation with the City of Port Phillip when it's planning its infrastructural proposals. I just wanted to remind the Council of this deficiency and ask that they consider it in future. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Anthony? Thank you, Anthony. I'll move the motion on the screen. You'll note that there is a slight amendment from the motion that was circulated, and that is simply to line up the wording of the dates there. You may note that there is not 6 weeks between the 18th of August and the 12th of September, so those words have been removed. Is there a seconder to the motion? Councillor Leppett, thank you. Right, so it's important to note, I guess, just how broad community infrastructure is. And it tends to include both the obvious and the less obvious, from childcare to maternal and child health to health centres and aged care facilities. But we forget sometimes the community infrastructure that falls out of the front of our minds, and that's things like neighbourhood houses and men's sheds and volunteer emergency services, and all these things need to be considered as a part of the integral community infrastructure that local government offers in the City of Melbourne. Especially in the City of Melbourne, our community is changing. Over the years 2011 to 2031, the number of families with children in the City of Melbourne will more than triple. The number of single-person households will go up by 150%. The number of couples living in our city will also more than double. So this requires a bit of movement when it comes to our policy settings, and that is very much what the Community Infrastructure Framework seeks to do. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Chair. Not too much to add. I think that this document, pending, of course, changes that will be made after the public consultation period, which is all we're really doing today, will be a very useful document in helping us to form public policy going forward. A lot of what's in this document is reducing the issue of needed community infrastructure to numbers. At one level that might seem crude, but another level it's absolutely necessary. Planning for the floor space for future needs of all our different areas, all our different suburbs, is something that is absolutely necessary. But there's many parts to this document which I think are going to be very useful to the council going forward, which we can refer to again and again in making future public policy decisions. So I think its need is probably self-evident. There are a few issues I have with the document. I note that North Melbourne on page 5 is neither a stable nor a growth suburb. I'm sure that can be tidied up. Except for the Arden Macaulay bit. And on page 31, I do note that the QVM Community Centre doesn't have any timelines associated with it. I think this council needs to do a little bit more thinking about whether or not that needed community space is going to be part of the renewal project. If so, how is that built in? If it's not going to be built in, do we make other time commitments as to when and how we do that? So I think a few of those issues can be teased out during the community consultation phase. Of course, all we're doing today is sending it out for consultation, and on that basis, I support it and look forward to seeing what comes of it.
Thank you, Councillor Leavitt. Would any other councillor like to speak to the motion? Councillor Wong.
Thank you, Councillor Forster. Just a couple of points. I think one of the key things that the underpinning principle with this community infrastructure development framework is looking at where strategically where the city is growing in the areas, and we've done a lot of that work in the MSS, and a lot of work we've done here, and I take the speaker's comment as nothing's been done in South Yarra. If I go back to a couple of items before on development contributions, we do realise that the city is growing so fast that we haven't considered infrastructure needs into the future, whether it's a developer paying or the purchaser paying. But in the end, that we know that when the population grows fast due to high developments, we need to provide services and infrastructure in terms of community needs. Recently, we had a look at the residential neighbourhood zones, and that discussion, which some areas pushed really hard to basically lock down those neighbourhoods too, which included South Yarra, included Parkville, parts of North Melbourne, parts of Kensington, and East Melbourne, which means that they really don't want growth in those areas, which means that if they're stable, and we've done over the years in terms of Faulkner Park Children's Centres and the work we've done down in Faulkner Park, the facilities in the East Melbourne Library, and a lot of work done in the north of the city, we need to look at the areas that are really going to grow and plan for those areas. So this strategy is consistent with that. And if some response from South Yarra, Parkville or East Melbourne saying, look, we're excluded. Well, you're not really excluded. Things have been done. There are a lot of things that needs to be done in the areas where people want to move into. We have the Arden-Macaulay growth area. We have the City North growth area. We've had a lot of growth in South Bank. And when we finish the West Melbourne structure plan, we'll probably find we'll need some community infrastructure there too. So I think you need to understand that the approach of we're not getting anything is actually not really the proper way to look at this. We have to look at it from a city-wide perspective and which areas need community infrastructure. So I commend the report, I commend the officers and the work done, and I'm looking forward to some of the specific deliverables out of this strategy.
Thank you, Councillor Wong. Would any other councillor like to speak to the motion? Any councillor like to speak against the motion? Okay, well, just in summary, as my colleague noted earlier, Melbourne is not in a bonanza of rate revenue. And I couldn't agree more. It's not. So a big part of developing community infrastructure is, of course, paying for it. And this document goes some way towards dealing with that, and again, will remain, I'm sure, a big part of the consultation. I wait with interest as to what suggestions are put forward on that front. On that note, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? It's carried unanimously. I now call on the Lord Mayor, Robert Doyle, to assume the role of Chair in relation to the major projects portfolio.
Thank you, Councillor. There is one report from management for consideration under the major projects portfolio, and that is the Queen Victoria Market Precinct renewal, the community engagement key project component outcomes. Would councillors like a presentation? Rob Adams, could you give us a quick presentation on this agenda item, please?
Through you, Lord Mayor. This report brings together the end of Stage 2 community engagement. That is not the end of engagement on this project. As is indicated in the report, the next stage of community engagement will be from this stage through to November, when there will be the preparation of the master plan, and that will contain options which will then go out for further consideration after November by the wider community, with final adoption in June of next year. So this process has been a process of gradually seeking views from the community, trying to articulate those views back into the report, which we have here, and then moving to the next stage. There are five key issues here that we ask you to consider to enable us to go forward to the development of the master plan and also the execution of a legal agreement with the state government for the transfer of land. And they are contained in Section 4 of the report. The report is up there, and I don't think I need to read it to you. You might want to just scroll the report back down to Section 4. And those are clearly spelt out there. I'd be happy to answer any questions on that, Lord Mayor.
Any questions for Rob? Cathy?
Sorry, Councillor Oak, I beg your pardon.
That's right, Lord Mayor. Sorry, I was just looking at the different pages of the report. Sorry, I was distracted. I just have a question about the process from here, and you talked about the draft master plan. And in the community engagement report, it does talk about the QVM master plan process, and it's got a series of sort of, I don't know, questions or themes. And so I just was wondering if you could just detail how people will be involved in this master plan process.
All right. From tonight, this is, if this is adopted, this is the start of the next stage. Having looked at various principles and themes around which the Queen Victoria Market has been operating, we, over the next three months, I think it is, between now and November, will have a fairly transparent process of trying to put an over a very high-level design to that. For instance, where if it's not going to be, if there's not going to be car parking on the current car parking area, what are the options around car parking? And clearly, what was canvassed here was an option for underground car parking in A and B under A, B, and C sheds. But there are other options, and what we intend to do is to go through those various options and have them on the table, costed for discussion, both with the traders and the wider community, before council is asked to make a decision on that. So this really, I think a lot of people think there's some mystical design out there. This is really the start of that phase, to start to actually put down design suggestions as to how the market of the future could operate with the various activities. And that'll happen between now and November. That'll be out in the open over December, January, February, March, I suspect. And then council will further consider the outcoming of that discussion.
And just to follow on, sorry, Lord Mayor, if that's all right. And that will, and I know, I think I'm asking a question I already know the answer to, but that will also, that master plan will come back with more details of the Franklin Street connection.
It will do. It'll do. So each one of those elements will be worked up. For instance, you can say the new Franklin Street is a road. You could also see it defined as the edge of a public space, which you see in many cities around the world, where you could be travelling through that at fairly low speed as it becomes the edge of a public space. So that sort of detail we haven't gone into. And that'll be the sort of information we'll be exploring into the master plan. We will look at all those elements and the options within those elements and try to actually bring those out in a way that there can be a meaningful discussion around them.
Thank you. Thank you, Rob. Could I call on Anthony Bandercrats, who requested the opportunity to address the committee, to speak for no more than 3 minutes?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I consider this report to be an absolute sham. It's designed to shoehorn in a predetermined decision to move forward to a predetermined outcome. I note that there were 8 submissions made in respect to the various consultation processes. One of those must have been mine. If it wasn't, it certainly wasn't reported, and it's certainly not reflected in this report in any shape or form. I'm particularly concerned and opposed to the suggestion that Franklin Street become a major thoroughfare linking up Dynon Road. I think this is ill-considered. It is a backward decision. I mean, the City of Melbourne just spent $3 million engineering congestion on Latrobe Street. We know what result that has happened. The safety aspect in respect to cyclists and public safety has declined dramatically, and there is now a major traffic congestion problem existing in that street. Opening up Franklin Street will be even worse, particularly when we start looking towards the end near RMIT, near Victoria Street and Franklin Street. This is a part of Franklin Street that, in my view, should be closed off and turned into some form of open space, allowing RMIT to flow into that area and perhaps integrate it with the city baths. So I think the Franklin Street issue has been badly considered, and I don't think its consultation has been adequate anywhere near enough, and certainly not reflecting the concerns that I expressed in my submission. I would hope that the City of Melbourne will publish those submissions, as few as they are, so that people and the public can see exactly what was written in them, not the executive summary, which is clearly false. In terms of the built envelope environment for the open space area that's currently there and how it's likes to see it developed, I think the proposal that's been put forward by the CBUS earlier today is probably a design concept worthy of consideration. I personally support the idea of an underground car park with shopping facilities also underground. They happen everywhere else throughout the city of Melbourne. You only have to go to Richmond. You can see it consistently a large number of developments that are implementing underground car parking. I think this report, as I said, is a sham. I think the City of Melbourne has already got some predetermined idea as a part of a land sale grab to sell off that section of land on the other side of Franklin Street, heading out towards the existing Franklin Street. I don't support this. I don't have any confidence in the process overall. I hope some sense will come about it and we'll get rid of the Franklin Street extension. And I also hope that we will see an open design concept that allows us to consider the entirety of proposals that are out there, rather than sort of like try and shape it into the point of view that we are. I recognise there is a need to determine the boundaries of the built environment, but I don't think this is the way to do it, and I certainly don't agree with the Franklin Street extension.
Could I call on Greg Smith to address the committee, please?
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Greg Smith is my name. I'm a representative on the Queen Victoria Market Advisory Committee. And can I just make the observation that it's probably been quite some time since so many market traders were in this place in one time. When traders approached the Lord Mayor some few years ago to talk about the state of business at the Queen Victoria Market, we didn't expect that the sort of project that's been proposed would come. We knew that change would be required. We knew that retailing globally was struggling. We knew that public retail markets were struggling. And that adapting to the new consumerism was going to be a task. The City of Melbourne saw a renewal as a way forward for QVM, and the financing of up to $250 million is a very welcome ingredient. Traders understand that key infrastructures like weatherproofing our market and creating enjoyable public areas don't come from pocket money. They come from projects. We understand that change will be needed if we are to get more people to our market. We know we need to change our trading hours. We understand that the key to getting more people to our market is to make it relevant to today's consumers, and even better, to become an irresistible magnet to locals and visitants. We are confident that we all understand the renewal of a public retail market has special ingredients that are quite different to mainstream retailing. The long-term gain to our market and its traders from a well-resourced renewal is very positive. However, there is short-term pain. Item one in the major components of the community engagement refers to the adaption and enhancement of upper market sheds A, B and C, which we've translated to talk about an underground car park. An underground car park with noise, dirt, barriers, obstructions, at a manner that will certainly impact on traders' businesses. And traders won't be able to escape that because we will be close by. We'll be right up against it. And in terms of short-term pain that I mentioned earlier, the guesstimates as the time necessary to achieve a construction range from 1 to 4 years. That's our guesstimate. Our problem is that we haven't gone into any detail on what impact that might have on traders, on how we would operate that sort of arrangement and still keep our businesses going. And in a sense, the timing of this presentation it's just too early. Traders need to look at a lot more detail before we can proceed further.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
Sorry, any questions for Greg? Councillor Oates. Sorry, Greg.
It's not actually a question for Greg. It's a question for Rob, and I'm not sure. But I feel that we're looking at the key issues that are listed in our document that councillors are looking at, 4.1, is different to what I think, just based on what you've just read out, is different to what we're supporting tonight. The 4.1 that's on the website, sorry, Lord Mayor, but okay. I just that he mentioned that it said adaptation and enhancement of upper market sheds A, B and C to support market trading. That is what's currently on our website agenda. But what councillors are looking at is slightly different to that. Are you able to explain the difference, Rob?
It shouldn't be any different at all.
It is. Sorry, I've just noticed that just because you read it out, Greg, sorry. But so maybe should I read out what we're looking at or is it... Sorry, Lord Mayor, I just...
Well, there was a previous one which was amended last week. I can only think you're looking at the previous one.
I'm just looking at the report that's currently live on our website at the moment. Sorry. It's different to what they're... It's different to ours.
But I'm told that that was redistributed last week and the one on our website's the correct one.
Okay.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks, Greg. Could I call on Mary Lou Howie to address the committee?
My name is Mary Lou Howie. I'm speaking as a customer. I'm a loyal customer who spends just $200 to $300 per week on food and other things, and have done so for 30 years. I feel, along with the traders, that no one has really asked me what my needs are and my thoughts on the proposed redevelopment. And it's very difficult to contribute meaningfully when we are all kept in the dark. We haven't seen any figures or the business case for change, and the Kapir report did not specifically address the concerns of the major stakeholders, traders and regular customers. A core strength of the market is volume, lots of customers buying a variety of goods from competing and innovative traders at affordable prices with easy, affordable access, including parking, all in an environment of enviable heritage value. Vic Market is the biggest and best in Australia. Selling land for a high-rise development on its threshold, putting a road through the land gifted to the City of Melbourne for a market, all for an inadequate underground car park that no one wants, will not retain and enhance, and I'm quoting here, the authentic market character and experience. This is merely yet another land grab, for me anyway, as I see it. When Melburnians see the first bulldozers on site, they will realise they've been misled. A great feeling of well-being comes with my shopping experience, in contrast to that of supermarkets. I know many traders. There is a great customer-trader relationship and community. We share information, both commercial and personal. I'm aware that at this moment leases and rents are being negotiated, and I've never seen the traders so edgy and, dare I say, intimidated. They expect their rents to increase significantly. They don't know by how much or indeed whether their leases will be renewed. They fear loss of their regular customers and business interruption during a long construction period. An example of intimidation is management's heavy-handed response to a petition written by traders to inform the public of the perceived risks of the proposed development. In spite of this, thousands of signatures have been collected and will be submitted to the Legislative Council when Parliament resumes. Management is rightly keen to innovate, but is in danger of micromanaging the retail activity into boutique-style shops and imposed product specialisation. I do not believe you have the retail skills, experiences or resources to compete with David Jones or Chadstone in this regard. The revitalisation should concentrate on the core strengths of the market. The night market is a successful initiative. String bean alley is
Thank
like
you,
a morgue
Mary Lou.
On
Could
market
you conclude,
days.
Please. Thank you.
And neither build on the core business of the market.
Thank you. Could I call on Mary McDonald to address the committee, please?
Thank you. In the 1930s, my grandparents sold vegetables at Queen Victoria Market, travelling by horse and cart from their market garden in Werribee. I was a general trader for over 25 years until retirement. Now I'm a customer and, along with another couple, travel by car for our weekly shop at the market. The map on page 6 of the report shows removal of the car park for open space and underground facilities at A, B and C shed. I assume these underground facilities are to replace the present car park, and if so, we will no longer come to the market to shop. We are not alone. I do not park in underground public car parks, almost never, and certainly not to shop. I will not travel by train from the outer suburbs, especially with loads of shopping. I do not ride a bike. In the community engagement report, June 2014 executive summary, you say, among other things, that you want to preserve the Queen Victoria Market's heritage and authentic atmosphere while allowing it to evolve to meet the needs of traders and shoppers. On page 3, you refer to seeking UNESCO World Heritage listing following a comprehensive renewal program. If you want UNESCO World Heritage listing, ask for it before you change the original features. The proposed changes, I believe, will possibly exempt it from World Heritage listing. The risk to removal of the sheds, storage and preservation of the structural material is high. I was told once of the market gates, once stored in this way, and they were eventually recovered, but many years later. If it's worthy of UNESCO heritage listing, then now is the time to apply. Why remove the car park for community activities when, apart from the obvious Flagstaff Gardens right there, the purpose of a market is to shop? I believe this proposal will destroy the vibrant, multicultural shopping experience we now love and enjoy. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you, Mary. Could I call on Brian Murray to address the committee?
As a former trader for over 25 years and current regular shopper, I'm extremely disappointed in what is being proposed. A marketplace is the site, but the market is the retailers within that space. The retailers are the heart of any market, particularly the Queen Victoria Market. I was proudly part of this beating heart for over 25 years and see this proposal as a stake in that heart. Perhaps not a fatal one at first, but allowing the life to flow out of this iconic market. One proposal is for underground parking. People generally hate underground parking because they feel unsafe, particularly the elderly and the disabled. The proposed closure, or so whatever, of Queen Street is ill-conceived, as this is in itself will discourage many from coming to Queen Victoria Market. I and my friends who now shop here regularly have disabilities and find it difficult enough now to find suitable parking. The proposal to connect Dudley and Franklin Street is, I believe, unwise, as it will funnel an enormous amount of traffic into the already congested RMIT precinct. You say it will eliminate two roundabouts. If this is the case, then traffic lights would most likely need to be installed in these areas. This proposal is, I believe, is mainly presented to allow for a multi-storey development on the current roadway car park to the south, which could cause conflict with night activities at the market. I believe the current road network works reasonably well and also provides extra parking not only for Queen Victoria Market but also for the northern city region. There is talk about having a closed off Queen Street as an entertainment area. From my experience as a stallholder, this introduced entertainment distracts from those who provide the core income from the market, the stallholders. In my opinion and in my experience, we the traders have been the entertainment. As a stallholder on Queen Street, I was subject to noise pollution from so-called entertainment amplified from across the road to the point where I could not hear the customers who were at my stall. There are a number of disturbing issues with the current proposal. A major issue is the lack of weight being given to those most affected, the stallholders. The CAPRI, or whatever it is, report has asked for feedback on a number of issues in this order. Heritage, 1. 2. Open space, 3. Car parking, 4. Access, 5. Attractions, 6. Retail, 7. Hospitality and services. From this, I deduce that the trade has come only 6th in your rating of importance. I have found that the issues are generally listed in their weighted order of importance.
Thank you, Brian. Any questions? Councillor Mayne. Sorry, Brian, Councillor Mayne.
Yeah, Brian, look, we've all seen the numbers about the market stagnating and falling down the tourism rankings. Quite a bit there on what we shouldn't do. We're looking at investing tens of millions of dollars in the market. What do you think we should do?
I think the first thing you should do is establish the market as a market. Once you start changing it from a market, which it is now, which is a trader's a place of business, and putting entertainment or anything like that, any sort of that distraction, it distracts from the market as a marketplace. And if you want the market to remain worthy of a market, and it is the biggest in the Southern Hemisphere, then keep most of it as it is. This underground car parking and all that entertainment down Queen Street, it's all a distraction from what the place is actually is.
Thank you. Could I call on Ivano Giuselli to address the committee?
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name's Ivano. I'm a member of the QVM Advisory Committee. I'm speaking on behalf of the non-food vendors of the market who once were called the fancy goods vendors or now generally known as the general merchandise vendors. We've been a part of the market from its inception, and for almost half a century we've actually composed over 60% of market traders. Like many public markets worldwide, we have been under significant pressure and challenges for decades, and traders have been pleading with management to help address these challenges. To be fair, the hybrid company, which was formed in 1997, and it was a term that the Lord Mayor used about a year ago, it was a hybrid company, which I found very interesting, it was neither structured or is neither structured nor resourced to deal with these highly complex and layered global issues that we have to deal with. Now, we're not here to apportion blame. We're not here to play victims. We have a shared responsibility in where we've got to. All parties need to take ownership. It may not be safe to say this, but it's true to say that until now we've pretty well all taken the money and done a runner. So that's the past. It's essential now to work together to find a solution for the future. Yeah, and it was with that intent in May 2012 that traders appealed to the Lord Mayor to seek support and assistance. We can say that things are improving. As evidenced by the fact that we're standing here tonight. We're able to discuss along with you your intention to invest and secure the market's long-term future. Traders are trying to do their part, trying to be more professional and less adversarial. The company is being more transparent and collaborative. We used to refer to the Board of Management as mythological creatures because we'd never seen them. Yet now we see them regularly and they hear us regularly. So we've come a long way, but there's a long way to go. We have made progress. We need to keep making progress. So why are we here addressing you? Well, whilst we applaud the stated intention to enhance and support market trade, we actually ask you not to endorse the recommendation as it stands. Why? Because the plan as it stands at the moment gives very little to no real detail to help us accurately understand whether it truly will enhance and support market trading. In my written submission, I'm going to conclude by reading straight from that. We are not saying no, but we cannot give unreserved support until we see clearly what the plans and proposals are. Just as we are wary about the detail, we ask you to be also. It is indeed time to endorse the enhancement and give support to market trading. It is time to review the performance of the market and how it's dealing with the ever-changing retail environment it competes against. It is time to return the Queen Victoria market to its premier position as one of the world's greatest market. Is your endorsement of the current proposal the way to achieve that? We would love to be able to say yes, endorse this proposal, but we can't until we see more detail.
Thank you. question. Ken. Sorry, Ivano, just one sec.
Ivano, just a question. In what you're just saying there, if you look at what's been presented, section four, where the five key concepts.
Yes.
And now some of the previous speakers have said, no, we think this is just a land grab. Others have said, we don't like certain things.
Okay.
I guess the question is this. From our perspective, while you don't want us to endorse this plan, what other idea do you have that things will improve? Because the car park currently above ground, to go underground to create a public open space where many community festivals are currently have in that little narrow spot of Queen Street next to the donut van. With a bigger space, because I've seen that every time
Councilor,
we have a festival...
there needs to be a question.
So the question is, do you see that open space is a problem because it's going to have festivals and other things there that brings maybe 20, 30,000 extra people to the market?
Now, look, really what we're saying is, until we consult further and have more detail, we're concerned about locking in these aspects, in particular the 4.1, which was mentioned before. We're very concerned about locking in the adaptation enhancement of upper market sheds A, B and C to support market trading, because that is making reference to the underground car park. We'd rather, on behalf of traders, have much more conversation around that to understand exactly what that means and how that will impact before we would like to see it locked into anything. It appears that it will be locked in. It appears that that's the way it's worded. We may have misunderstood the wording. Certainly the wording here under... at point five, the Capira report makes the point that subject to further development of the concepts and ongoing consultation. That's very good to see. We'd like to probably see that in the recommendation from management as mentioned in there as well, that this is all subject to further development of the concepts and ongoing consultations. That's not stated in that part. I think traders would like to see that there. They would probably feel a little bit easier if they realised that this wasn't locked in as it is, but it's still open to consultation and further discussions.
Thank you. Councillor Rowe.
Sorry, could I just clarify too, because there's two concerns that you have raised that I think are common themes. And I was wondering if Rob Adams, Professor, you could confirm that firstly, by endorsing 4.1, we're not endorsing underground car parking as a fait accompli. Because that's what you said at the start, is that correct? And secondly, I guess if you're going to speak, is just if we endorse this process... And again, I think I asked you this question at the beginning about the master planning process. The idea from now until the end of the year is to collect a lot more information and present a whole lot more detail in the master plan process.
On 4.1, the reason that was actually changed early in the week, as you all know, and as you've recently raised because you have the old paper, was the clear understanding that we didn't want to lock the underground car park to A, B and C. We want to look at those options and other options and come back for endorsement. So we clearly heard the feedback we had earlier in the week when the traders' representatives came along, met with yourself and Councillor Main and said this is our one concern. So this doesn't lock you in. While the Capri report talks about it being there, this is very specifically worded to say adaptation and enhancement of the upper market sheds A, B and C to support trader, not mentioning the car park, because we will look at other options. At that meeting, as you know, one of the traders raised whether or not the car parking could go onto the commercial site. That is something that we said we would consider. Previously, the traders hadn't felt happy about that. So we are genuinely saying we will now look at options, and those options will come back to you at the end of the year, and you'll be able to, as with the traders through this process, look and assess those before any master plan is actually adopted in June. So the time things get locked down is June next year.
Thank you. Thank you.
Could I ask a question?
Yes,
please?
Councillor Watts.
Excuse me, Professor Adams, just a question. It seems I'm hearing a different theme coming out of tonight. I'm hearing that we're working very hard on the planning. I'm hearing that people are getting engaged with the planning, but I'm also hearing from the gentleman in the bowler hat over here that there's a question around the retail strategy and the business of the market. And I'm wondering if people are seeking reassurance that we do actually understand the retail side of the market. Have we actually engaged anyone in the business side of the market to inform us.
That's possibly a question best asked of Jan Cochran-Harry, who is the CEO. She has engaged people to work on the retail strategy, and certainly they are working through what is the current state and what the future state will be. So that work is taking place in parallel to the work that's going on any design. We have not commenced a design. We really need to have greater understanding of some of those things to start to test that design, and that's the process that starts now.
Thank you. Thank you. Could I call on Jenny Pike to address the committee?
Hello. My name's Jenny Pike, and I'm a member of the QVMAC. My submission to the council is around the consultation process. We're extremely grateful to the opportunity to speak to the council, and we're grateful for your commitment to the Queen Victoria Market and to the Queen Victoria Market traders. This enormous commitment from the City of Melbourne of between $100 and $250 million is much appreciated. The QVM has approximately 700 small businesses who derive their income and provide income from an estimated 2,000 staff and supply millions of customers annually. These businesses in turn support thousands of other businesses. Many of our traders have merit awards from the Lord Mayor for their long-term commitment to the City of Melbourne's prosperity. Back some time ago, the traders went to the council looking for investment after many years of what we consider minimal investment in the market. When the Lord Mayor came back in October last year, announced the redevelopment of the QVM, we look forward to robust discussions about the what, how and why of the redevelopment. What occurred were three single low-level information sessions with Capire during round one. The results of the first round of Capire were amazingly similar to the plans talked about in the Leader in 2010 and then subsequently released in The Age in April 2013. The traders were then very anxious and worried at the low level of consultation with them and made many individual submissions, reinforcing they were against an underground car park and the implications for traders at the QVM. Traders then held two very large meetings with over 270 traders present, and these voted unanimously against the underground car park below A, B and C sheds. This was reported to Capire before the finalisation of the second round of the information hub in F shed. In the Capire report, there was no mention of the outcome of these meetings or in the subsequent report. The outcome of this meeting was also presented to the QVM board. And we asked, how do we get this process of consultation back on track with the traders? No questions were asked at the meeting or formal responses given to QVMAC regarding this presentation. At every stage, we have asked, when does the real consultation happen with traders? At this stage, the collaboration with traders has been minimal. The final Capire report was only verbally released to QVMAC, with no copies of the report forwarded to QVMAC for formal feedback at the time. It is difficult not to believe that the consultation process was carefully orchestrated to reflect
Jenny,
a predetermined outcome.
Please. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Could I call on Joe Stolarek to address the committee, please? Thanks, Joe.
No worries. Lord Mayor, councillors, my name's Joe Stolarek. I'm the F Shed Leaseholders Traders Advisory Committee representative. In speaking to other leaseholders in F Shed, common themes continue to arise. The F Shed leaseholders are concerned about some of the intentions of the renewal process. They believe some key existing issues have not been considered prior to embarking on this project, several matters must be considered and addressed. Firstly, all-weather protection roof over F shed, which is, might I add, the only shed in the Queen Victoria market which has no adequate protection for the comfort of customers and traders. This project of roofing has been deferred countless time over a period of at least 30 years due to various reasons, including funding, designs, heritage, and awaiting the scope of various master plans. This project needs to be included and completed prior to a temporary market situation. There are short-term issues such as overall weather protection solutions in E-Shed, the Peel Street footpath, and Queen Street that need to be implemented sooner rather than later. Also, the impact studies, we'd like to see them relating to the A, B and C shed enhancement, as we now put it. It needs to be fully investigated. The leaseholders would rather see a collaborative approach involving design models that we can look at, we can touch and we can have opinions about. The stallholders' input should be a requisite at most times. The leaseholders, I believe, would like to have research consideration based on various needs. There is a possibility, speaking to several stallholders, of a two-bay east-west facing vertical multi-storey car park featuring a sustainable rooftop garden that would be solar powered, and it could feature a full panel mural of an Australian or Indigenous theme facing L Shed. We could have LED lighting for the many nighttime and proposed outdoor events. To reiterate, the F Shed leaseholders are, I believe, not in agreement with any possibility of an underground car park. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Any questions for Joe? Thank you. In that case, could I call on Barry Carter to address the committee? Barry Carter? If Barry's not here, in that case, Con, you asked us if you could address the committee, please. Go ahead.
Good evening, Lord Mayor and councillors. Thank you for your audience. I represent the dairy hall at the Queen Victoria Market. I've got to say, with the new management that has come through, I have only positive reports to give you. I've certainly seen them to be very, very positive in their outlook, in the concept of the market and the opportunity there. Very intelligent and very engaging at a business level as well. And also, again, just coming back to the different opportunities that we have for a great land and a great amount of money offered in the redevelopment. Our concern here, I guess, fundamentally, if I could summarise, really is the first point. And the clarification that we seek is into this implementation of land configuration. You need to be aware that, as Jenny Pike has said, there is unanimous rejection of the concept of an underground car park by all traders. We feel that that has not been clearly indicated in the reports that have been given to you. There certainly were other locations considered or indeed discussed at the meeting last week where we had with some councillors, and that again was raised earlier tonight. I guess one element that we may be looking for is possibly the extension of time for the master plan coming to be solidified, gaining form. One issue that we have as dairy hall traders is the overwhelming changes that are being applied to us. If I could just point out the potential rent increases, which range from, say, 30 up to 100%, which is a huge impost on a small business operator. The concept of specialisation of trade, where traders will be asked to, become specialists in as the term implies. I'm sorry, I'm not doing too well in front of this audience tonight. My apologies. My concern there really is in terms of the specialisation of trade, The last three traders that have been admitted into the dairy hall, namely being Cocoa Black, an established brand name chocolate distributor in Melbourne, Market Lane Coffee, and Tubi Occurring, a branded spice shop. This certainly isn't a development that we would like to see continue in the dairy hall, and it comes back to the issue of questioning who is advising the retail mix strategy for the market. Where the last thing we want is to have a boutique market losing the essence which is borne by family trade or family-based traders. I thank you for your attention. Thank you.
Thank you, Con. Any questions for Con? In that case, could I call on Jan Cochrane-Harry to address the committee?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. We've heard the concerns of traders tonight, and I understand very clearly and agree that these are natural concerns. We recognise that change can be challenging, especially at the point where it's not known by anyone exactly what the change will be. It can be a positive opportunity for people to contribute ideas and improvements. I think everyone agrees that improvements are needed for customers and traders and future generations. We are still in the process of research, review and developing draft proposals and options for discussion and consideration. The consultation with the traders is ongoing. There has been exhaustive discussion with traders over an extended period on a range of matters, actually starting over 2 years ago when the QVM chairman and the City of Melbourne CEO commenced discussions with the traders to understand their concerns. For my own part, when I commenced as a consultant 12 months ago, I spent the great majority of the first 3 months listening to and talking to traders. Since becoming CEO 9 months ago, I've been readily accessible to all traders, and there have been many, many meetings. I think traders know that I am aware of their concerns. There are no secrets and there are no final decisions on the immediate horizon, as far as I know, and concerns have been passed on. Since the beginning of 2014, formal consultation procedures have been put in place, responding to the traders' requests, including the board appointing two directors to attend each QVMAC meeting and the full board hearing a trader presentation twice a year. We have many mechanisms for regular communications, including trader portal, regular printed bulletins and numerous open meetings. As the QVM traders know, we are also proposing a process of individual meetings with every trader over the next few months to ensure that we're aware of their plans, desires for the future, and that they are aware of the exact processes we're undertaking. We know that it's difficult for many traders to come to meetings, and the elected 10 elected trader representatives do an excellent job in helping to keep people informed. But with over 750 businesses in open stands and small shops, it can be challenging for them and for us. And of course, we note that there are very diverse views, as you would expect from any community the same size. And it's difficult, if not impossible, for them to arrive at a consensus view. We know that there is major concern around the potential for disruption to trade during whatever construction works are finally decided upon. The board and council have agreed, and I have conveyed to the traders, the policy that the market will have continuous operations throughout the period, and we will be working up a range of possibilities for discussion with traders to establish how best to manage that. We will put in place with them in consultation, hopefully to be assigned jointly before June next year, a continuous market operations agreement. There is still much work to do prior to any decisions being made. Relationships have actually been strong, and I'm hopeful that that will continue to be the case. The market has been in place for 137 years, and between us all, it is our responsibility to keep it strong for the next century. So let's not forget the big picture.
Thanks, Jan. Thank you. Any questions for Jan? Thank you. In that case, I'm happy to move the motion that is on the screen. Is there a seconder for that motion?
But with an amendment.
What is the amendment, sorry? I'm happy to accept that. That's fine. Yeah. Let me speak to that motion, and I thank our submitters tonight for the depth of passion and expertise they bring to us. And I can assure you we have listened to the concerns you put before us tonight, and I'll address one in particular of those in a moment. I go back to 2012 when traders themselves came to me in a small group and then in a much larger group to say
you must make an investment in the market, we are going broke. And we took that on board, and we took it very seriously, and we said to them, you realise that this project has got to the starting line any number of times, and then there has been a failure of will and resolve, sometimes from council, sometimes from market, sometimes from state government. And so we worked very hard to put all three of those, especially including the traders, on the same page to say we need to move ahead. We need to develop a coherent investment in the market that will secure its future. I won't go into too many of the individual things that were raised, but a couple of them I think are very important. The first is we have to make this step in order to give to you, the traders, and to the wider community the detail that you need. That's not to say we've made decisions about it, but if we don't put the major building blocks in place, we can't do the detailed work which so many of you have asked us for tonight. That's not to say we're locked in on anything, and that includes, by the way, we have heard you about an underground car park. And we may need to talk to you further. We do need to talk to you further about how we make good in our commitment to maintain parking at the market, to maintain its continuous operation, but to upgrade it. I understand that. But again, I go back to the fact that it was the traders who came to us to say, if you don't make an investment in the market, you may lose it, which is what is happening to markets around the world. I just make that commitment to you, though. There is not a detailed design operation plan yet. This is the first step to providing it, to say, here are the major rough building blocks of what we think should happen. Now help us to do the detailed work in each of those precincts to work out what should be in there. I will say personally, and I can't speak for the whole council, I hear you about an underground car park, but I would not be supportive of a multi-storey car park, for instance, on the existing site. You know, I don't think that is a good option. That's my personal view about something I've heard from you there. I want to take Greg's point, and I think we are all on the same page here. Greg made the point that we want the market to be an irresistible magnet, and that's exactly what we do want. But that means we have to ask, what then does it need to offer in order to do that? And many of you have said to us, there are things that need to change. And now we're to the point where we need to start talking about those changes, and I understand that causes great anxiety, particularly when we're dealing with people's livelihoods as well as the heritage and tradition of the market. But we can't have it both ways. You know, we can't say no change, don't change anything. Don't put an underground car park there, leave the Asheville car park where it is, don't develop beyond Franklin Street, but we want change. Because that just doesn't make sense. You know, if you're going to say we need to upgrade the market and spend the money, then we need now to work together on those big parcels to say, what should they look like? Where should those cars go? How do we protect the livelihood of those traders now and into the future? And by the way, how do we protect our market by, in the conversations I've had with the federal minister, by attaching it to, for instance, the exhibition building's World Heritage listing to absolutely protect it. And he advises me that he thinks that's the best way to do it. I know that you are also fearful about what might happen to the development around Franklin Street. Can I point you to what we did at Boyd School, where we got a great outcome for the community of South Bank, a great outcome in terms of public infrastructure, by working with a private sector partner, but by describing to that private sector partner exactly what our imperatives were for delivery. Now, I'm not suggesting to you that that is the immediate model we'll go to. Let's talk about that. But we do have a model that is being looked at not just around Australia but around the world about how we can work together to get great outcomes for the local residents, for the people who have investment there, and working with the private sector. So while I understand the anxiety and the fearfulness, because you are talking about something you're very proud of as well as something that is your livelihood, I go back to those meetings in 2012 and the equal passion that you all brought to the table to say, make an investment in the market. I know you will say to me, Robert, but make the right investment. And that's what we want to do. But until we do this, we can't talk to you about that specific detail that you want.
And that may say to us, don't do an underground car park. That's fine. That's a specific detail, although a big one, that we will deal with. But that's where we go now. We have to go to this draft master planning with you, and we have to sign off with the state government on having that land swap organised so that we can proceed with the necessary legislation that will be required in order for us to do anything at all. That's all this does. That's all this does. I have great faith in the CEO and the board of the Queen Victoria Market. You have great goodwill among the officers and the councillors to get it right, and you have our commitment to work with you. So I would say to you that this doesn't close down or obviate any of the concerns you've raised tonight, but unless we do this, we can't move to the next stage. Councillor Rack.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I just said to my colleague, I'm a bit nervous about what I'm about to present, but here I go, and the fact that I seconded this resolution, I wasn't sure which way I was going to go, but no, I'm not going to withdraw it. I actually now, you know, I do support it, and there are many reasons why I do actually support this recommendation and why I have seconded it. The resolution tonight. I speak not only as a councillor, but also obviously as a long-term resident of North Melbourne and the vicinity around the Victoria Market, and a long-term shopper. Most Saturdays, if not every Saturday, I'm there on Delhi Lane with not only myself, but three generations of my family and our friends. There's between 5 and 30 people there at any time taking over the tables in Delhi Lane. So I speak as a long-term customer and a resident of the area. And there are many people, I guess the reason why I'm nervous is that there are many people in the audience who I've known for a long time as a result of those relationships or that attendance at the market. I'd like to say at the outset, I am actually really excited by a lot of the concepts that are presented and that have been presented in this process. In particular, the open space. I think that is an exciting idea. What it actually ends up being, again, the devil is in the detail, and a lot of what the Lord Mayor has presented and already said, the devil is in the detail. And I think that, and the reason why I support this is that it's either we support this resolution, we defer it, or we object. And I don't feel that the next stage in the process will be helped if we defer or object moving to the next master planning process that is before us tonight. I don't have a predetermined outlook of what this actual end up being and looking like in the master plan. We've been accused of tonight. I don't actually have a predetermined plan in mind as to what it will look like, but it's the concepts that have been presented that I do mostly support. I am concerned about the Franklin Street connection, and I'd like to think that in the master planning process more detail will come on that, including traffic modelling and how the interface will present at the street level. But most importantly, I did hear tonight, and I have heard leading up into this meeting, and hence why Councillor Mayne and myself met with many traders last week. We heard that you, and we've heard again tonight, that you're concerned that you haven't been heard and that you haven't been represented adequately in the consultant's report. And that is concerning to me. We're paying a lot of money for this process. We're paying a lot of money to the consultants. And if that is, it's a genuine concern of mine that you don't feel that you're well represented in that report. And I'd like to emphasise that I've heard what you say. I continue to hear what you say, and I take those views and those concerns not only in supporting the recommendation tonight, but as we move to the master planning process as well. That I have pointed out, I guess, a couple of times tonight, and there was a reason for that in that emphasis when I spoke to Professor Adams, that I've heard tonight that the underground car park is certainly not a fait accompli. I've heard that there is a lot of opposition to it, and that wasn't well represented in the consultant's report. But as a result, perhaps from your concern, but I believe that Professor Adams has explained that it is not a fait accompli, that it will be perhaps one of an option that is presented to us as the master plan process, but it's certainly not the only option that will be presented to us as the master plan process. But I also have added in, I've added into 6.1 my interest in ensuring that if we are creating a mixed-use development as part of this process, that we do ensure, as we as we have at Boyd and we have at other developments that the city has been involved in, that we do demonstrate council zero net emissions and our housing strategies in whatever that development becomes. And whilst I'd like to think that it is business as usual to enact our council strategies, it's important to me that we actually get that in writing, and hence why I've included that amendment to the resolution tonight. So I have got through my presentation and I do support it, but I just want to reassure everyone here tonight that I am listening and I have heard, and that I continue to take that feedback as we move to the next stage of this process.
Thank you. Is there a further speaker? Motion, Councillor Wong.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Listening to all those presentations tonight, I understand there are concerns about the car park, and I understand that the concern is about the car park is probably the disruption to it if some of these plans that's been discussed goes ahead. I think there's the other side of it. I mean, I get to the market. I know some of the people in the market in different sheds. And they always complain to me there's not enough car parking. Then there's the other half of the equation, that some of us in council who says we should have less cars and have more people walk there. So, you know, this is a conflict that we always face. Because, I mean, I can talk to Councillor Oak and she says, no, we don't need that many car park spaces. Why can't people just walk there and take public transport? And then, of course, there are others who have spoken tonight says we want to go there by we're driving from other parts of the city. And the traders always tell me that there's not enough car park. They've got to pay for it. So I believe the main issue is the disruption that will cause by this project in terms of the car park that's available for those traders who believe that without the car parks, customers won't come. And I think it's a key thing that needs some further work. But as the Lord Mayor said, if we don't do this today, we might as well abandon the whole project. Because if the government doesn't agree with us, or we don't agree with the government on this agreement to transfer the land, we got no project. Simple as that. And if we don't have any project, the continuation of the current situation with the Victoria market will keep going on. It'll just keep going downhill. Now, I'll take a couple of other examples which may or may not be relevant. Over the last 10 years or so, if you notice Westfield spending a lot of money in Doncaster, because it was falling behind. The competition it faces with other shopping precincts. Chadstone's done the same, and it has had disruption. It has closed off part of Chadstone, expanded the underground car park, expanded the above ground, and added more modern facilities. Because they know, too, that if they don't do it, they'll become less competitive, their customers' number will drop, and then the tenants will leave, and their rents will drop too. So if you look at the businesses of some other situations, we can take two approach. Argue this to death and end up doing nothing, or say we're going to do it and let's figure out how we're going to manage this and do this well. In terms of a planning perspective, having car parks above ground, one, a big open space is a waste of open space. Two, multi-story car parks above ground are actually a very bad outcome for the city, because all you get are dead interfaces to the street because there's no active frontage. We prefer it to go underground so that the ground level is active use, where there are shops and businesses and others. So when I look at this and all the arguments here, we don't want an underground car park. Well, you might as well say we don't want any changes, because there's not going to be any change. Anyway, I support what we're doing here. How we do it needs to be worked out.
Is there a further speaker to the motion? Councillor May.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. First thing I'd like to say is that we have, by the end of this financial year, we will have extracted close to $100 million out of the market coming to the council, and that it is time that we invest back in. So it has been more than $5 million a year for many years, and in total it's close to $100 million. And ironically, our cash balance at the moment is about $100 million at the council. So I think there's a very strong case for, and a long overdue case for, reinvesting heavily into the market. And I will continue to support that. We have an incredible 18-acre site here, which is very, very large by world standards in terms of markets. And so there is the opportunity of better utilising the space, and that's where peeling off the southern portion to help fund the spend is part of the concept. That is also where 700 at-grade asphalt car parks is not considered a particularly good use of an 18-acre site. I think there probably will be some short-term pain, but hopefully there's going to be a lot of long-term gain. Councillor Wong mentioned Westfield, the numbers, and I'll remind you of the numbers there. Revenues went from 450 to $830 million after a $600 million spend that took a couple of years. Numbers went from $8 million to $15 million. So if we can get that sort of doubling of those numbers, doubling in turnover, doubling in visitations, then everyone's businesses are going to be a lot better off with those metrics. But it may be a painful couple of years in reaching that outcome. Clearly, this won't be a success unless your traders' businesses are flourishing. So this is not some land grab. We need successful traders to have a growing market. And the idea of the spend is to make more vibrancy and more flourishing and successful traders. I guess the key reason this has come up tonight is that we are about to ink a contract with the state. And the feeling was that there are some conditions in that contract, which hopefully will become fully public in time. The contract will become fully public in time. The major metrics are mentioned tonight, that we felt we needed to get the council's authority before we actually commit to this land swap with the state. And the state is talking about expecting us to deliver a very attractive piece of public open space. And so we need to, you know, if we're going to do this land swap, we need to make sure that everyone's clear that we want to, and we've signed up to deliver a very attractive piece of new public open space. And that's one of the metrics with the car parking and where it goes. Car parking at the moment is obviously charged. We make $3 or $4 million a year out of it. So clearly the solution with car parking will come down to volume. Is there enough of it? And price. Is it a fair price? Is a good value for your customers? And these are metrics that we can control if we do go into the underground model, which obviously hasn't been decided yet. And in hearing the concerns about the car parking, my approach will be we need to mitigate those concerns and make it as attractive as possible on volume, price, access, all those things that come into play. Tonight you've all been heard by 10 of the 11 councillors. There's about 10 senior staff here, there's the deputy chairman of the QVM, there's the CEO, everyone has been very loudly heard. This audio is on the web forever. You can come along any Tuesday you like, first two Tuesdays of the month, and you can ask a question at the start of the meeting or at the end of the meeting. So it's been great to have the engagement, to hear what the traders think. Look forward to having a whole lot more of this over the next couple of years. And thank you for all coming tonight and presenting. I'd like to also thank particularly Jan and Jane for also coming and for presenting, and obviously for Rob for leading the work by the officers. It's a difficult project, difficult process, a lot of important stakeholders, none more important than the traders, and I think we need to support this proposal tonight to take the process further along and work up the detailed master plan later in the year, and then hopefully have a final concept ready to go sometime next year.
Excuse me. Is there a further... No, sorry. I'm sorry, you can't. No, I'm sorry. There is an opportunity. Because our procedures don't allow for it. You can slow down. Stop, please. There is an opportunity at the end of the meeting for you to ask questions. But we provide that opportunity in talking to us at the beginning of the meeting. So if you would like to ask us a question at the end of the meeting, then I provide the opportunity for you to do so, and that's the appropriate time to do it. Is there a further contributor debate? Councillor Pender-Mortimer.
I just want to say that this time last year I was on a personal trip overseas, and I visited London, Barcelona and Milan, and I had several discussions with the three market authorities over there, and key to the discussions was trader engagement. And one of the key things that learnings that I brought back was that how critical trader engagement is to this whole process. I commend CEO Jan Cochrane-Harry on her efforts.
And I really urge you to work with her, because I saw from each of these major cities in the world and how they had gone about their revitalization and renewal programs. And I spoke to traders there in structures that were temporary structures, and who were really quite wrapped in the outcomes. As Councillor Main said, you know, we want to work with you, we want to hear your voice, and I know Jan wants to hear your voice as well. So those one-on-one consultations are going to be very critical, ongoing. And I think today really is a case of voting for us to move forward and then engage from there how we can make it feel for better for you. Thank you.
Councillor Watts.
I'm going to vote for this motion primarily because I think we have to engage with the state government to get this parcel of land. But what has most clearly come to me tonight is that with the best will in the world, there seems to have developed a sort of a difficulty with the credibility of the process, and that's not about you people and it's not about the management of the market. There's something in the process that's led to this situation where we have a whole lot of really busy people coming out tonight and arguing their point. We invest a great deal in community engagement, and I have to say this would appear to be not a particularly successful one to date. But I personally would like to reassure you that you are listened to from the council. And I'm sure my colleagues and the officers are taking on board very strongly that you don't feel as though you have been listened to and you've had to come at a sort of critical point like this. I'm hopeful that a very good outcome will come out of all of this, because the reality is, as a number of councillors have already said, we can't stay with what's going on now and we have to improve the way your businesses operate. But the other thing I want to say is that historically, market trading is about the traders, and it's a different kind of retail mix, and let's say perhaps a bit more anarchic than we might recognise first up. So I commend you all for coming. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there a further speaker to the motion? Councillor Leppard.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I'll try and limit my comments to new material. We have discussed the Queen Victoria Market renewal quite a lot, but the point I want to make is that this is the first time that we are going on the record endorsing a position to go forward and do something a bit more specific than ask the community what they think. Phase one of the consultation was blue sky, you know, what do you think? That's now been done. Stage two of the consultation was seeking feedback on five key themes, and that's what we're now at the end of that process. We're being asked to endorse those, to allow the land swap deal with the state government to be negotiated, and to allow our officers and the QVM officers to work closely together to work on a master plan if this motion is endorsed tonight, which it sounds like it will be. I'm happy to support it as well, because on balance, I think that the five components that we're looking at here are good things. The one that is most important to me, I'm not quite as closely connected to the market as Councillor Oak has made out, but I am there more or less every week as well, is the second of the five key project components. We do need to retain the authentic market character and experience. That is the one that is most important to me. The point I make is that this is the first opportunity that we've had as a council on the public record to make that sort of statement and to consider this sort of motion, which commissions that detailed work from happening. Any project of this size needs a multi-phased community engagement program. We couldn't have just said, here is a master plan, what do you think? Because the criticism would understandably have been, where the hell did this come from? Please go back and, you know, work with us from the beginning. So there's always going to be a criticism about how the engagement processes are set up phase by phase, but I think that this three-phase community engagement program is the best structure you can use. I do actually, though, share criticisms that other councillors have expressed about the way that those three phases, well, we've only had two so far, and the reports that have come back from those two phases. I do think that the report that we're looking at for the first time tonight is inadequate, and the proof of that is that it is telling us that what the themes are that came back through, but nowhere in that report does it actually really engage with this idea that the traders were unhappy with certain components. And I think that means that the report is inadequate, because as soon as I saw that report, I thought, goodness, that can't be right. That doesn't align at all with what I've been hearing every week at the market. And sure enough, we've had enough people here tonight to demonstrate, I think, that the report that we've got from the consultancy is not adequate. So I think that the three-stage community engagement process is the right one. I do have some criticisms about how that's been reported back through, but we have to make a decision tonight as to whether or not we can proceed based on the information that we have. I'm happy to proceed, particularly because most of those key components I'm actually quite happy to support. I think that big new open space in the area is something that I'm quite excited about, and I'm very happy to support the five key components. I do thank Councillor Oak for the tweak to the fifth, because if we do have to have a development at the southern end of the market to help fund the other components, then let's make that development a development which leads by example through our zero net emissions and housing strategy. So I think that is an ingenious addition, and thank her for it. I end where the Lord Mayor and Councillor Oak... my Greens colleague here. I end where the Lord Mayor and Councillor Oak ended as well, and share that goodwill, and note that the master plan will come back to us. We will see it when you will see it. I'm interested in making sure that the decision that is made at that point is the right one. All we're doing tonight is getting that drafted up, if you like, and saying to officers, yes, there is an in-principle support to go to that level of detail. We've heard a lot of questions about why we can't engage with that level of detail. That is going to happen. I share the goodwill that's been expressed by other councillors, and contact councillors if you want to. I add that commitment and want to hear concerns and want that goodwill to be expressed from my behalf as well. So I'm happy with the motion before us, and look forward to stage three of the community engagement, which is going to be the most important and detailed stage. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there a further contribution to debate? In that case, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That is carried unanimously. Thank you. Could I call on Councillor Mayne to assume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to finance and governance?
Lord Mayor, it's been a long night. I think we might do this some other time. Actually, no, we'll take a two-minute break if people wish to leave, and then we'll finish the business of the meeting.
Sorry?
It's going through my mind.
The triangle. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Just get, you know, paralysis. Yeah. Sorry? That's a silly judgment. Yeah. You're shallow. Honestly. Oh. Yeah, well, I'm a bit cross that...
Okay, order, order. Order. Agenda item 6.7 is the allocation of the discretionary fund for the fourth quarter of 2013-14. Would councillors like a presentation? Okay, so I'm happy to move the motion on the screen. Is there a seconder? Seconded by the Deputy Lord Mayor. I don't propose to speak to this item, Deputy Lord Mayor.
No.
Any other speakers to this item? It's an ingenious item. All those in favour? Councillor Ong is absent. Any against? Declare that motion carried. Okay. And agenda item 6.8 is the 2013-14 fourth quarter June 2014 year-to-date financial performance report. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No? Okay. Well, I'm happy to move the motion on the screen. Is there a seconder to that? Lord Mayor. Okay, so this is actually our year-end financials. So this is quite an important item of business. It shows that we've come in with a surplus of 1.2 million, which was actually pretty much almost bang on the original budget. That's actually a good outcome when you consider all the overs and unders, particularly the $3.2 million hit that we've taken with our recent parking refund issue. So we were heading for a surplus around the $4.5 million mark, which was going to be $3.2 million or thereabouts ahead of budget, and then at the finish line, that got taken away from us. But these things happen. So the outcome is still strong. The cash balance is still $99.34 million at year end. That's only down $3.5 million for the year. Some of the notables in there, obviously parking fines has finished up $1.2 million unfavourable to budget. And interestingly, parking fees also finished up $530,000 unfavourable to budget, partly because of some damage to our parking meters in Carlton. Intercompany revenue from our subsidiaries, Queen Vic Market and Citywide, is $3.5 million below budget. Virtually all of that is Citywide. QVM has delivered to budget in terms of contributions to council. Rates revenues, $1.7 million unfavourable because we've had a number of challenges coming through our rate assessments, and that has actually led us to be finishing at $214 million in rates revenue for the year, which is $1.7 million under. The CapEx, we spent $105 million down from $106, although we underspent by $13.4 million on the budget. And good to see we've also underspent $332,000 on conferences and travel. So we've been very disciplined in not travelling excessively. Our legal budget also was $860,000 over budget. We've had a number of issues with East-West, the Watergate Apartments short-stay issue, ports, Port of Melbourne land disputes, Occupy Melbourne, quite a few legal issues. So our legal spend has been $860,000 over budget. But overall, we are in very good financial health. The CEO has done an excellent job with the books, as has Mark Stormer and Fu Nguyen, our CFO. So well done to the officers for in a quite difficult circumstances with a number of items coming at us we weren't expecting. That in the context of all of that, we have still delivered smack on budget, and we are still in a strong financial position with $100 million in the bank to be able to undertake things such as the QVM renewal project, which will be our biggest project in our history. Lord Mayor.
Or maybe not.
Any other speakers? Anyone in favour? All those against? Declare the motion carried unanimously. And Fu sat here for 3 hours to not get to speak. Fu, is there anything you'd like to say?
It's a great debate. It's out of order.
Great debate. All right, it's out of order. Okay. I now call on Mr. Robert Doyle to resume the role of chair.
That's the right honourable, right, well-beloved and right trusty, if you don't mind. Thank you. This concludes the reports from management to be considered. There is one item of general business, which is a proposal by Councillor Foster to attend meetings with the Sydney of Sydney. And could I call on Councillor Foster to move the motion in his name?
So moved.
Thank you. Is that seconded? Thank you, Councillor Mayne. Councillor Foster, you wish to speak to it? Councillor Mayne?
I just think that Councillor Foster should advise City of Sydney to adopt the Melbourne model when he's up there talking to them. And I think all councillors should be encouraged to give their thoughts this evening about whether Sydney should copy governance practice in Melbourne, as has been widely reported in the press today, that they're going to ditch their model of totally disenfranchising the business community and move to the very successful, well-oiled Melbourne model. So, Councillor Foster, good luck with your trip and encouraging the export of our governance models to our sister city.
Very helpful, Councillor Mann. Is there really another speaker to this motion? Councillor Leppard, are you sure you can't resist?
No, I do. I just point out to the gallery and fellow councillors that the previous contribution was completely out of order. It has no relevance whatsoever to the report before us. I support the motion before us, and I note it's very efficient of Councillor Foster that we're not actually spending a cent, and so we're going to get a good pound of flesh out of Councillor Foster for this. So thank Councillor Foster. I personally disassociate myself from everything the previous speaker said about the utterly flawed City of Melbourne electoral model.
Which elected you. Resign and apologise. In that case, I'll put it to the vote. Thank you. All those in favour, that is unanimous. Thank you. Are there any items of proposed urgent business? In that case, we do provide a period at the end of the meeting for members of the public to ask questions. Is there anybody who'd like to ask us a question? Anthony?
Yes, I can assure the council the electoral model is flawed. Councillor Leppard shouldn't have been elected in a fairer system. In terms of my question, the state government acquired a large sum of money from the City of Melbourne to develop the Federation Square project, somewhere in the vicinity of $75 million or $150 million, I'm not sure the exact amount. I'm wondering what's happened to that investment. Do we own equity in the development in any shape or form, or can we call on the state government to reimburse us that investment, which we can then put forward to the Queen Victoria market development?
I don't recall, before any of our time in Federation Square, the city doesn't own any part of it. Federation Square...
Well, we forked out $50 million or more.
I'm not sure that that's right. We'll get the answer to that for you. I'm not sure that that's right. A number of your statements are not always right, Anthony,
but I remember this.
This is not a discussion.
But what's happened to that investment?
The answer is that Federation Square is a single unit trust vested in Treasury Corp Victoria.
Then what happened to our $50 to $100 million that we put into it? Did we lose equity altogether? We've got no call on it. It's a black hole.
That is the answer.
It was from the sale of the electricity company.
That is the answer.
Well, you should look back into the history of it all. That money just disappeared into this development.
Thank you. Is there any other question from members of the public? Yes, certainly, sir. Brian, isn't it? Brian, I want you to know, charmingly, you are recorded as Brain in my notes here, so I hope that's all right. That's good.
The question relates to, obviously, the Queen Victoria market stuff. I hear a lot, and I haven't actually had time to go through it completely, but I hear a lot about, from different councillors, land swaps with the Victorian government, state government, and public open space. Can that be explained quickly to me?
I can. It's actually not a land swap. It's a gift of land to us. The land under Queen Victoria Market is a mixture of ownership. There's some of it that the city has bought and has freehold. There's some of it for which we are Committee of Management, and that is Crown land vested in the Queen Victoria Market Crown Lands Act. In order to do this, we need, and there was also some owned by Vic Roads. We need the state government to transfer that land to us, and that is the agreement that we were talking of tonight. They have agreed to do so, but we need to execute the contract with them by which they will transfer that land to the City of Melbourne.
I hear you say that. But you also said that the state government were demanding, or that wasn't the word used, public open space such as green space, etc., which Councillor Ong noted. I think where he says if there's no transfer of land, there's no project. I understand that, but what's this about? Is this like the similar one that was earlier in the evening? If you don't put up green space?
No, not at all. As far as I know, it's not a demand of state government. At the announcement, the Premier certainly expressed a desire that the car park be green open space to complement the activities of the market. But that is not a formal requirement, as far as I understand, of the contract.
Okay. Yeah, it seemed to come across to me that it was a mandatory, that was all.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Thank you.
Excuse me for my outburst
earlier.
That's okay. But I didn't realise that you did have question time at the end of it.
Yep.
The question that I'm asking is, as far as the transfer of land is concerned, now, one of the big issues with the market is obviously the car park. So what I'm worried about is is it a case of we transfer the land, it'll get built upon, we lose the car park, and there's no car park to go into. So what I'm after is an assurance from council that no building or change in the car park will go ahead until the new car park is actually established, wherever that may be.
Yeah. My understanding is we have made the commitment to at least the same number of car parks to you. That would be my preference, that car parking continues, but that will be worked out. I would strongly suggest, we've heard you about car parking, we know how precious it is to you. That to me is part of the continuation of operation and working out just how that happens with the management of the market. And if you're not happy, come back to us here. I wish I could give you a more specific answer than that, but in fact that's what we now need to work out with you. How do we make that happen?
Well, it's fairly easy. It's either if you're not doing the car park on the actual car park site, then you guarantee that there is going to be another car park established prior to any works being done on the existing car park.
And that's what we're going to have to look at, exactly.
So there's no guarantee up to date to
well,
now
I,
for that?
I don't like sort of 100% guarantees. I mean, our aim is for continuation of operation of the market.
Okay. And that's my concern is also that fact that we may end up with a building, open space, no car park, and a market which runs without a car park.
No. No, the CEO is happy to answer that.
We can come up with a number of solutions. We would hope that we would have a car park built before the other one goes, but remember that we also control a whole range of on-street car parking. So we will ensure that you have a car parking solution during the operation of the market. We can't necessarily guarantee at this point in time where it will be.
I'm not asking for a guarantee of where it'll be.
Yeah.
I'm asking for a guarantee that the car park will be, wherever it may be built,
yeah,
will be established prior to any work starting on the existing car park or any roadways or any buildings that are going on the southern side.
Yeah, and we will ensure that we schedule activities to maintain the operation of the market, and that means that you need to have your visitors park. So I think we can work out the solution. We just don't know what it is yet, and you'll be involved in that.
No, unfortunately, it doesn't give me
any
guarantee or any
idea. But we don't even
idea.
Have a guarantee from the state that we've got land yet, so,
Well, that's the question. I've put it on the record,
we've heard you very clearly. You understand our difficulty, though. On the one hand, you say to us, we want to work with you, through these major issues. Do not present us with some predetermined outcome, and the other part is here is where you want a predetermined outcome. Let me give you
no,
an example.
No, I'm not asking for a predetermined outcome. I'm asking for an assurance that there will be a car park built, because it's no good you giving me an assurance that you're going to build your building and your open space and not build the car park later on because you feel you don't need it. We can ride a bike in.
No. That is not the case. That is not, when you say build a car park, though, as the CEO has said, the interim solution is not necessarily building a car park. There may be other ways of doing it, and that's what we want to talk to you about.
Again, it doesn't answer the question. It doesn't give us
the
guarantee.
Best answer I can
give
you.
It doesn't resolve anything as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
But thank you for your time.
No, thank you. Anybody else like to ask us a question? In that case, could I thank members of the public, management, and staff for their interest and attendance and declare the meeting closed at 8:43.